Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Down in Front. Our movie this week is Mystery Men.
Yeah.
I like Mystery Men.
You probably never seen it.
Pop in your DVD or Blu-ray.
It's pretty underground. You probably never saw it.
Press pause. When the Universal logo has faded to black, the first frame you perceive of all black, press pause. And in a second, I'll say 3, 2, 1 and pause, at which point I'll press play. You'll press play, and we'll watch the movie together in perfect sync. It'll be like any other commentary, except, of course, with four friends in your head. This week, myself, as always, T. Christie, Sax Carr.
Hi.
You can't wave.
Yeah.
It's radio, man. It's
no,
radio.
But I mean, you said my name, so what more information they need? Like, I am also Sax Carr.
Yeah. You could do something witty, or you could take off your top hat that you're wearing.
Well, we're doing this whole pre-programmed bit where I don't know what to do.
Michael Dorkman Scott.
What?
Damn it. And Trey the Amazing Stokes.
Yes.
Mystery Men, I saw it when it came out, and I remember it was sort of... This and Death to Smoochie are actually connected in my mind, because they were dark, and they weirded me out when I first saw them. And then I remember, like, over the years since then...
It's funny, because just reading the trivia, Danny DeVito was going to direct this
was
one, gonna
be
too.
The shuttler.
Wow,
he was
gonna
crazy.
Be
the shuttler and direct it.
Crazy. This, I remember, and this is a weird experience to have, I remember the movie pretty well. I remember being weirded out by it. But as I got older, it came out in 99, I guess, so I would have been... 3 or 4. As I got older, I started remembering the movie and liking it more. Like, I started getting things about it. And I revisited it this past week, yesterday, actually. And I kind of fucking loved this movie. Yeah. There are some things it does that are a little goofy, a lot of which can be sort of swept under the rug because it's a kind of cartoony world anyway. She has a flying bowling ball right off the bat.
Yeah.
And
that's, which is so much crazier than a guy who shoots spider webs out of his wrist.
Right, right. It's kind of, it has its dopey moments, but on the whole, it's fun. And I enjoy the characters. And this is one of those all time, like JFK or A Few Good Men, all time great movies for the Kevin Bacon game. Because
everybody's in this fucking.
You guys didn't know where I was going with that, did you?
Yeah.
it's everybody's in this goddamn movie.
I was willing to hear you out.
Everybody's in this goddamn movie.
There are even people in this movie who weren't famous yet.
Eddie Izzard. Fucking
CeeLo Green is in this movie.
Is CeeLo? Is that CeeLo? Yeah.
Michael Bay is in this
Michael
movie.
Michael Bay does a cameo.
Dude,
he was already
can
Michael
bring
Bay
our,
at
can
point.
We bring our brewskis?
Yeah. Michael
and my favorite one is Doug Jones.
Yeah.
Dane Cook.
A,
yeah. Well, Dane Cook shows up, but he Dane Cook's all over this fucking movie.
For eight seconds.
Doug Jones, Abe, what's his last name?
Sapien
from Hellboy, and of course the scary monster guy in Pan's Labyrinth, Guillermo's skinny guy, shows up just to be the skinny guy in this movie, because why not? And it's just fun and dopey and interesting, and I was watching this movie, and what occurred to me is that Watchmen, such as it is, Watchmen is the what happens next question for superheroes in a real world universe. Mm-hmm. This is the what happens next in the cartoon universe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm down.
This is totally a riff off of Watchmen. It's like a you know,
yeah, Mystery Men.
Watchmen got clipped on the shoulder and went spinning off to the side, and it became Mystery Men.
It became like a satirical, wacky version.
Anyway,
of Watchmen.
It's not perfect, and we're gonna have some negative things to say about it. But on the whole, it's just a weird ass, funny, goofy, dark movie.
Well,
and I'm down, Sax.
This is pretty. I mean, I don't know this for any amount of fact, but considering it has Stiller and Garofalo and a number of other like major comedians that were basically all trucking together at the time in it, I suspect that one of them picked up the Dark Horse comic that this was based on and said, "Let's do a movie where we get to be funny that is vaguely based on this."
Let's put the band back together.
I want to point out that the original Mystery Men comic has Flaming Carrot in it, so like, this is radically different than the source material.
And is it literally a flaming carrot?
Yeah, it's a flaming carrot, I believe, with legs.
Okay,
which a carrot top.
I just think it would be hard to realize on film, you know, so
at the time that would have been pretty expensive.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the villain
is expensive now, impossible in 99.
Yeah. Or awesome in a Corman way if they just put a guy in a foam suit and set his head on fire.
Yeah, just constantly on fire.
Well, they also upped a villain who was like a side villain into a major villain, and they did a lot more with the changing, but it's basically a chance to see all these great comedic talents essentially doing an ensemble piece.
Yeah.
And I think
it kind of reminds me of Ghostbusters when you put it that way.
Yeah.
You take a bunch of comedians, put them in a movie together with one central theme and just say, go.
It is. Ghostbusters was like the SNL movie, you know, reunion, and this is kind of the Ben Stiller show reunion.
At this time, in fact, when there were rumors of Ghostbusters 3, pretty much the cast of Watchmen was going to be the new team of Ghostbusters.
That's interesting. I just like how you pointed out there was a specific time in history where there was talks about Ghostbusters 3.
Well, no, I'm saying at this point in the
Ghostbusters
3 talks.
Before Ghostbusters 1, there wasn't.
Yeah, at this point in the Ghostbusters 3 talks, they were talking Ben Stiller and
Garofalo. The timeline of rumors about Ghostbusters 3 is not a point on the chart.
Yeah.
It's a line.
Yeah. It's a plane.
But do you like the movie?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I very much enjoyed it. And I also hate someone in this film. This isn't a theme, folks. I just happen to hate two actors ever, and we have two films in a row. But anyway, I am not a huge Ben Stiller fan because he traditionally plays a guy who just gets screwed so badly that I just can't watch. And I don't know, his selling misery sort of thing does not work for me.
Or he's like the kind of retarded mean guy, like the character
Zoolander.
He plays in Dodgeball.
I like Zoolander.
I like Zoolander, and then in Dodgeball, he's like Zoolander but mean, basically.
Dodgeball, he was the same character he was in, wait for it, Heavyweights. Yeah. Remember that movie?
No.
Nope.
That's... Yeah. That's like a summer kids movie from 94, 93.
The title rings a bell, but
had
I
had a little baby Kenan Thompson and a little baby Ben Stiller in it.
Wow.
Anyway.
I'm not a fan of Stiller, but I actually like him in this film. I think Mr. Furious is actually my favorite character.
Yeah.
Really?
Just for some strange reason, there's something about him, except the...
That's just so useless.
Yeah. And the idea that he's like, that in a world where everyone's basically adopting powers that essentially they either don't have or barely have, he's the one who's like, yeah, I'm great when I'm angry, and then just doesn't really ever capitalize on that, but ends up being a necessary leader piece. I don't know. Maybe I have an anger issue and I resonate with it. I'm not sure. But I liked the film a lot. I liked a lot of it. I thought Paul Reubens does a fantastic job in it.
It was sort of
That was for me the first time seeing him outside of Pee-wee, and I'm like, what the fuck?
Have you seen Blow?
I have now.
It was kind of, okay, it's been long enough. We can kind of maybe let Pee-wee Herman appear in public again. You know, let Paul Reubens do them, because you let him out of the doghouse.
It's an altogether good movie. It deserves to be a cult classic. And it is, and I guess it's steadily getting some, you know, attention. I would love to see it played more like in little hipster theaters and get people behind it, because it's a great little film. And it's actually probably the last or one of the last times I've liked Janine Garofalo.
Yeah, for me too. When she went with the tats, it was over for me with me and Janine. But
for me, that's when it started.
Yeah, exactly. Well, see, but you're younger. My age.
And that's
about
the same time she clearly gave up on people like you.
Well, that's true.
My age is, you know, hey, you know, I'm the age that I am, and which is a, you know, generation away from you guys, and you know, tattoos on pretty girls, they don't go on pretty girls, they go on sailors on the cover of National Geographic, and otherwise, you know, it's a terrible thing. But she's adorable in this, and a weird movie that I love her in is A Truth About Cats and Dogs, where she's adorable in that movie, and I love her in that film.
But, oh, Trey,
it is, it's adorable.
Darkman, how are you on Mystery Men?
I love this movie, at least I keep qualifying it with, at least I did the last time I saw it. I'm so afraid I'm going to pull a Spider-Man 2 and just fucking hate on this movie all of a sudden. But I don't think I will, because I remember very specific reasons for loving it. I think the characters are great. I love, you know, like you say, I have a problem with Ben Stiller, generally speaking. From the same movie, the Meet the Parents, I was like, that left me damaged in my soul to watch that movie. That wasn't funny. Yeah. I've avoided it.
I have no interest in ever seeing it.
I came out of it like, I need therapy from that movie. Like, I just went through that. That wasn't funny.
Force
at
of
all.
Awkward or just force of mean-spirited comedy?
It's mean, yeah. It's more than awkward, because I like awkward. I watch The Office and stuff like that, but it's just mean.
And it's that inability to get out of it logically. Where, like, you just look at a character and you're like, just tell people what happened. And then they don't. And that happens for a whole movie.
Right. And also with something like The Office, there's also the moment where there's the crazy awkward, but there's also the, like, all right, well, everyone is just going to accept this because that's who that character is, and they just let that be. But with Meet the Parents, it's not like that. It just builds and builds and builds and builds, and there's no release of tension. But we're not doing that movie, so anyway. Yeah. Sorry. I didn't mean to go off on that.
And clearly we're not going to in any hurry.
Yeah. But I loved Mystery Man. I think Mr. Furious is great. He's decided that his power is when he gets angry, but he has no anger issues. He's got the opposite of anger issues. He's like just the most chill guy, and he can't make himself get angry. And when he does,
nothing happens.
Yeah,
I think it's funny because if you think about it in Watchmen terms, only one of them has a superpower. So the bowler is Dr. Manhattan.
Yeah. And then the Blue Raja, who I love Hank Azaria.
I love Hank. Tremendous. I want him to be in everything ever. He makes Godzilla okay.
Have you seen him when he plays dramatic, when he just plays it straight? Yeah. He's fucking amazing.
I'm sure he is. But he's got such a – he's so fucking awesome. And La Cage aux Folles Birdcage.
Yeah, the Birdcage.
I love Hank Azaria.
But the Blue Raja is so funny because he makes such little sense. Yeah. And even the people around him are going, nothing about you makes sense. Your power doesn't make sense. Your name doesn't make sense.
You're not British.
You're not even wearing blue. What is that about?
Can you please throw knives?
Yeah. All the I'm not knifey boy. I'm just Blue Raja. This is like just how does that explain the spoons? But anyway, we could just go that way with all the characters. It's like this is just this it's so baffling that it's charming. It's like, yeah. Where did this come from? Where yeah. And it's a based loosely on a comic book, but yeah, it's just got its own little thing. It doesn't feel like anything else. It's very unique and strange, but it follows all its own rules, and it's like, okay, this is this little fucking weird self-contained thing, but I love the characters and I love the story, and I'm very entertained all the way through.
Trey?
Yeah, the way I always interpreted the movie and whether or not it was the intent of the original comic book or whatever, it's isn't it convenient for superheroes that when they gain their powers, whatever they may be, that those powers are useful for fighting crime? Whereas this is about the people who are like, what's your power? Really? That's it?
My favorite line is, honey, I shovel well.
Yeah, that's right. So it's about a guy who's a...
He shovels well.
And he really shovels well, and he wants to be a superhero. So I related to it because
it's...
this
is the B-list, too. Yeah. Where it's not about the superheroes. It's about the wannabes.
This is about the nerds of the superhero group. Yeah. These are the outcasts of superheroes.
Dr. Horrible later traded on the same sort of theme.
Absolutely
same
did.
Sort of theme.
You know, and the idea of... and the fact that the one genuine superhero is a douchebag. Yeah. And, which you kind of think...
He's actually the villain, yeah. Essentially, at least one of them.
If you kind of think about what, like Watchmen, it's like, what would Superman be like in real life? What would Batman be like in real life? He probably wouldn't talk to you. Yeah. He wouldn't talk to you. He wouldn't associate with you in any way. He has nothing in common with you other than maybe he'll, save your life, but he doesn't want to get to know you. He doesn't care about who you are.
It's like Batman saves you, and then you look up and you're like, want to hang out?
Yeah. No. Excuse me. Gotta go. So it's an amusement. It's interesting. The interesting thing about it is directed by a director who, in the 12 years since, has not directed another feature film, and has only directed this one ever. Kinka Usher is one of those people who's like, well, if you look at IMDb, then clearly he died in 1999 after he made the movie, which is not true at all, because he's a very successful before and since commercial director, and many directors like Michael Bay and many others made the transition from music videos and commercials to directing movies, and sometimes they become Michael Bay, and sometimes the movie is... Sometimes. Unfairly, notoriously a bomb, and you go back to making commercials and making millions at it, because making commercials is actually the most lucrative directing job there is. So Kinka Usher out there is doing just fine wherever he is and not missing the feature world that much.
So but, don't you cry for him.
Yeah, he did, among other things, he did at the time, the Yo Quiero Taco Bell commercials, which was, he's making a mint on those. But this is we'll start it, but the opening scene is like, oh, this movie's in serious trouble. Because the opening scene is so wrong and gets off to such a bad start.
It starts the movie off.
Artie totally Lang shows up with red steampunk goggles and throws over an old people's home.
Yeah. Mm. It's just the way it's done. Nothing wrong with the concept. It's the way it's done that throws the movie off, but then the movie gets better. But I love this movie.
I have an alternate universe, fringe red universe concept for this film. Watch it as if, instead of superheroes, they're all actors. And they're all really proud of a quality of acting they're not very good at. And they're like an improv troupe trying to get attention. And Greg Kinnear is the really successful actor. It actually works. The whole analogy works. Superheroes were famous people, everyone's like,
it's a
the Blue Raj
thing.
Is like, I can throw forks. And someone's like, no one cares about improvising in today's market, is essentially what people are saying. It's an unusual way to see the film.
Oh, Sax, you're the improv downtrodden.
I am, yes.
On that note, you're at the point where the Universal logo has faded to black, like I am. And my finger is on the mouse, so try to keep up. Three, motherfucker. Two, motherfucker. One, motherfucker. I didn't even say pause. Try to keep up.
Psych.
There's four motherfuckers, by the way, in case you're counting.
Now, is this movie the Galaxy Quest of superheroes?
It doesn't turn it on its head enough.
It's not
as subversive.
Yeah, it's not going straight. Well, I don't know if Galaxy Quest is even subversive.
It's satire.
Because the thing about Galaxy Quest
embraces.
Yeah,
tropes.
Galaxy Quest is more like Shaun of the Dead in that it's living in that world and going, what if we're... Well, I guess Mystery Men is then, because Mystery Men is, this is that world, but we're following the wrong characters. So yeah, I would agree that it probably is.
This, by the way, is so weird and out of left field. Not the scene. The fact that this universe, which, by the way, it doesn't need to be, is apparently Blade Runner. Like, there's old school, future... Utopian cities.
It's half Blade Runner and it's half Batman and Robin.
Yeah,
right
or if you look at, I was going to say Burton's Batman, which sort of set the tone, but the idea is like...
But there's like screens on the walls and stuff.
Yeah, who the hell lives in that city that Batman drives around in? Where are the schools? It's like some strange gothic fantasy paradise that isn't a real city.
Yeah.
But,
now, Trey, is your contention that this is just too silly?
It's not that it's silly. It's that the jokes are a little unpleasant and often like just stupid. There's like a bedpan joke. There's a joke where the arm
gets stuck on the chandelier.
It's like, and the movie never like makes that wrong a choice.
This
ever
feels
again.
Like a foreign director directing an American comedy.
It absolutely yeah. does. Like trying to be where you
it
wacky.
It feels like the lens should be like an 11 millimeter and this is a Gilliam film. Like yeah. then it would make total sense.
Isn't it like,
I just blew my fucking mind.
And,
yeah.
I don't mind the idea of the concept of it that, you know, these guys have to be, you know, the mystery men are going to save a sad little old folks party from a bunch of very bizarre and not very effective bad guys because that's the level that they operate
right,
on.
Right.
That all is fine.
They can't. These are, well, like you said with the improv troupe, this is the gig they have to play. They haven't
yeah,
got
yeah.
the big theaters,
but
and
the
stuff.
Idea
they're playing
of, you
the
know,
old folks.
Stealing
song.
The guy's eye doesn't make any sense, even in this universe. And the, you know, the bedpan, the artificial arm, and the, you know, and the punch bowl joke, and the slapstick.
I will say that I want his goggles.
Yeah, me too. I was just going to say that.
Do you see my? I got steampunk goggles back there. They're really expensive ones from like Scotland.
I'll put out before we move too far from it from the intro. Another movie that failed in the execution, but the script was great. It ultimately became Hancock. The story of the misanthropic superhero who saves people, and they look up. They're like, "Thank you, Hancock," and he's like, "Shut up," and flies away.
Yeah,
because he doesn't want. Like people ask him, they're like, "Why do you save people when you hate them so much?" And he's like, "I don't even know. I've just got these powers, and I got to do something with them."
Yeah. Which is, again, another great subversive concept. Yeah.
Does the shoveler just hit Artie Lang in the face while he has a fork stuck in cake in his mouth?
Well,
wouldn't that kill you?
I'd do it, too. I would have done it, too. See, the whole thing, like, the fluid went into the bedpan.
Like Pete does.
Yeah, it was like just the worst possible joke, which is, you know.
You're in this movie. Look,
you're
fighting
like,
Ben
are.
Stiller twice.
Put the goggles
with
on.
Awesome goggles.
Put the goggles on. Go to Comic-Con. You're good to go.
Artie Lang shows up for this scene and this scene only.
And he's apparently a person that people know?
No. Well, he's a Howard Stern guy. And he's made, as far as I'm aware, and I'm sure there's more, but as far as I'm aware, only two appearances in movies. Fucking IMDb this shit and could be wrong on the forum.
Didn't he do Maximus Awesomus?
I don't know.
Awesomus Maximus?
The one I'm thinking of is the movie Dirty Work with Norm MacDonald and Artie Lang pulling pranks on people.
That's actually a weirdly popular one.
Yeah,
I hear a lot of people saying they really like Dirty Work. It's been a long time.
Yeah, I feel about Dirty Work the way I'm defensive about people feeling about basketball. Like I feel like basketball is mine and I don't like Dirty Work, but I always feel like people are attacking basketball. Meanwhile, I'm over here like Dirty Work was retarded, and a lot of people think it's their comedy, you know?
What's interesting is that if they actually didn't like hurt each other,
and directed by Bob Saget.
They would be okay in this movie.
The Mystery Men?
The Mystery Men would be all right at what they do.
They have abilities. Like, the Blue Raja is, like, doing stuff.
That's an amazing thing that he can do.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, not.
And the Shoveler is actually pretty much effective throughout the film. Like, he's not, other than the fact that he hit Ben Stiller there, he's actually quite an effective melee combatant. Yeah. I mean, if he just didn't use a shovel, for God's sake.
Yeah, the shoveler is as skilled as the Punisher. He's just using his shovel as his weapon of choice. And then, of course, any movie, I have a theory, and I can be proved wrong, but I can't think of an example. Any movie with Ricky Jay in it, good movie.
Right. Also, if Ricky Jay appears in your film, then whoever he's associating with are the villains. Like, Ricky Jay is never a hero.
Interesting.
Which is sad, because Ricky Jay is such a sweetheart.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although he's in the Heist. He has a great character that does in the Heist. Worth checking out. David Mamet. We've referenced David Mamet. When you want to see David Mamet actually make a film, The Heist is a great David Mamet film with Ricky Jay in a sizable role.
I love a lot of Mammoths. I haven't seen The Heist, but Red Belt and, of course, Glengarry Glen
Ross.
The
Heist is really good. I've watched it several times. And it's got that Sam Rockwell dude in it. And the Danny DeVito. It's got an amazing cast.
On the subject of Ricky Jay, I grew up with I'll stress this because I cared a lot. An exceedingly difficult to find tome called Cards as Weapons, written by Ricky Jay.
Yeah. Worth hundreds of dollars.
Yeah. I have it. I own it. And
really?
It is badass. And it is the place from which I learned almost all the things I was once really good at and can now still kind of not as well do with cards, including throwing them. And Ricky Jay is, for just those playing the home game, the best card manipulator in terms of basically throwing them on the planet. Jeff McBride is another card manipulator. But
he does
productions mostly. Yeah. Fans and productions.
Digitization.
Yes. Ricky Jay can literally throw a card into the rind of a watermelon, which, by the way, I did too one time. He could do it consistently on stage. I tried for months, and I did it once. But it's fucking hard.
He threw it over the Magic Castle once. He threw a card over the Magic Castle.
He can throw... I
heard Ricky Jay has a third fist under his beard.
there's a video where he just throws cards at a watermelon for like 15 minutes, but it's so engaging. And he manages to throw... He does like a Robin Hood. He throws one card into the watermelon, and he's like, all right, right next to that one. And he throws another card right in next to it.
Yeah, literally like throw a stack.
Yeah. I was legitimately very good at throwing cards for a while there. I could chop a banana in half, peeled, not through the skin, from 15 feet away. From 15 feet away. That's you need a lot of force to get through the banana, and it's an accuracy thing, and it's a fun skill. If you ever want to kill a summer the way I did with a deck of playing cards and a target across the room, getting good at throwing playing cards is oddly helpful. Like, every now and then, you'll just do it in front of people, and they'll go, what the fuck?
Well, that's
and then don't do it again.
That's what Bill Murray said in Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
She's
a couple
like,
hours a day, 6 months. No, you'll be good at it. Right
be, yeah. the, be the hat. The idea of the product placement, talk about product placement,
well, that's
is the advertising that he actually has corporate sponsorship is, I think, one of the great jokes of this.
It's very Booster Gold, sort of very... preeminent Booster Gold and the selling sponsorship on yourself. The fact that he has to then become a villain basically because he doesn't want to be if there are too many heroes, if the town's too safe, he won't get sponsors. Is pretty amazing.
Yeah, well, I love the idea that he gets bored, so he releases one of his old villains because like all the fun's gone. Like, what am I doing? I'm playing the old folks home. I gotta play the Carnegie Halls again. You gotta get me a good gig. Get me a good villain to beat up and destroy half the city so they can appreciate me.
Sort of like Watchmen did as well. This movie / comic book takes the idea of, you know, the rest of the day in a superhero's life. You know, what do they deal with? What do they think about? What's it like to be a superhero for a year or 2 years and 10 years? And these things do start to creep in. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, I'm bored. You know, I'm people aren't adoring me anymore because I've gotten rid of all the supervillains and I'm losing my sponsorship, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, the idea of the simplistic superhero, it takes in a satirical way, takes the idea of what is the full life of a superhero like?
We should mention Watchmen like the book more than the movie, because in the movie
they made a book out of Watchmen?
Yeah. They had some weird superpowers in the movie, whereas like in the book, you know, almost every one of the characters was just a person. Yeah.
But their superpowers?
That was the point.
Who has superpowers aside from Manhattan?
They were a little bit more
capable.
They all
capable. Do. They were like super...
Well, they were super strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were super strong. They could take being smashed into walls and shit like that.
And the guy from Hard Candy was sympathetic, so I didn't buy that.
Yeah.
I was like, he totally molested 5 children before this
He fucked Juno.
Yeah. Or wanted to, anyway.
Ricky J has a line
when
here.
In actuality, Juno fucked him.
Yeah. Ricky J has a line here where he says, I'm your publicist, I'm not a magician.
Ricky J, by the way, is... I don't know how the fuck... A fat, more or less unattractive, Jew-is-all-hell magician became an actor, but he's such a great actor. I'm so fucking glad he ended up in movies, because he's so cool.
Dude, magicians, magic and acting is basically the same thing.
You say that now, but if you see David Copperfield try to deliver a line, you will retract, sir.
That's fair enough.
David Copperfield has a great stage presence.
Stage presence, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, how is that not
delivering
a line?
He dances like a fiend.
Well, yeah, no.
Yeah.
No, I just did ninja moves because it was... I talk like Eddie Doty. No. I saw him on a sitcom once and he was... it wasn't working.
That's because he wasn't delivering his own lines.
Right.
Well, I guess that's
doing
fair.
Doing his thing.
But who? Other magicians? David Bowie.
Funny little loser.
Yeah. Penn and Teller were amusing
Penn and Teller.
On Sabrina
Penn Teller
the Teenage
great.
Witch.
I like, well, you know, Penn. Yeah. Teller's a really nice
Teller's
guy, by the
too.
Way.
Teller is really
Teller's
nice.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a very... Great. The word for Teller is dapper.
Yeah.
He's dapper a very dapper
and,
guy.
And he is as soft-spoken as you would expect,
yeah.
really. He's
but he
not,
does talk.
Very
yeah,
articulate.
He can talk.
Yeah, that, very articulate.
At Look
Simpsons,
at us fagging out about magic.
Simpsons episode where
I was fan of magic when I was a kid, too.
We meet Penn and Teller backstage, and Teller talks, and when Penn goes to talk, he goes, no, the gypsy's curse was you talk on stage and I talk when we're not.
And pretty serious effects in this movie.
Yeah.
We should also mention.
Mm-hmm. Was that a model at the time?
The move was so beautiful. I think it has to have been a
right.
model.
Yeah.
I love models, by the way. Ed Wood, the first little sequence in Ed Wood where they're flying over old Hollywood.
We should do Ed Wood because I love that movie.
Yeah. There's a movie that's going to have some split opinions about it in the chat room.
Really? Because any movie with Maurice LaMarche is fucking awesome. Anyway.
Now here
I forgot about Captain Barbosa.
Yeah. Jeffrey Rush. Jeffrey Rush is in this movie.
Jeffrey Rush is another one of those actors.
Who will do this?
Well, that
and God bless him.
You watch him in movies like this, and you're like, I'm so glad that he's willing to like slum it.
He already
like
had
this.
An Oscar at this point, and he just did King's Speech.
Right.
But he's also Captain Barbosa and Casanova Frankenstein.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
That's so beautiful. And Eddie Izzard shows up, by the way.
This is Lena Olin. Lena Olin is also a well-known respected
actor. Is she
actor.
The chick? I was going back and forth on this in my mind. Is she the chick, the old Silk Spectre?
No.
And also
no,
the dance teacher in
Sucker
Punch?
That's Carly Gino.
Okay. Because her face... did that to me. What did I just say?
Oh, have you
and this look for Jeffrey Rush. This is the hair and the no shirt and the
yeah.
Huh, okay. It's like Barbosa with his shirt off.
Rehabilitated? Yeah. Well, I don't know what the hell that means. Yeah. I know what you think it means.
That'd
Sam.
Be great. Let's redub this scene with that.
Yeah. Andy Dufresne.
Or actually no, I think it should be redubbed with Nicolas Cage from Raising Arizona. I am rehabilitated, sir. You're not telling us what we want to hear. Well, yeah, I am telling you what you want to hear. I am rehabilitated.
Have you guys done If Looks Could Kill yet?
No.
Nor watched it. What is that?
It Looks Could Kill, I forget actually who was in Looks Could Kill. Yeah.
Oh, so it sounds good.
Yeah, it's, I'm just bad at remembering actors and things. You should watch it. That's all I'm saying.
What the hell is it?
It's a.
You should watch it so I don't have to try and remember it.
It's like a 007 ripoff with, some odd half Italian star as the like
Looks
kid who becomes
kill.
A spy.
Richard Grieco
yeah.
and Linda Hunt.
Oh, okay. Yes. I've heard of it.
Well worth it.
An oldie. So clearly Captain Amazing is definitely the Batman thing because his alter ego is, this straight-laced dude.
Lawyer.
I love that he does this where he shows up. And it's clearly him. And then Mr. Furious is the only one who's like, guys, they're never in the same room together. They look the same. And where is he getting all of his funding from? It's clearly the same guy.
With just the
and glasses. And then the Shoveler in particular is like, no. Yeah. No. He wears glasses. He doesn't. And then later, in the room with Captain Amazing in the chair, he's like, hey, do you know that lawyer guy? He's like, yeah, that's me.
Yeah, totally me. It's me.
And then Mr. Furious is like, oh, awesome. And he's like, I always wanted to say that.
No, it's not really.
It's interesting that he got him. Compact storytelling and stuff, and it's more interesting to have the two of them in the room because, you get the sense that
God,
Casanova,
Sax is such a nerd.
Shut up! I just got my free Comic Day comics. Oh my god, this is when we recorded this.
Yeah,
it's free Comic Day. It's dated. Mickey came back with a stack of comics and handed him to Sax, and he's like, "Ooh!" Just flips.
Zombieland, every day is free Comic Day.
That's presumably, right. Casanova Frankenstein knows. Who he is
in Soviet Russia? Comic yeah. frees you.
So, it's interesting that you got to think. Even Casanova Frankenstein is like, really, this is happening right now.
Yeah,
all right.
Can't believe that worked.
Yeah,
I totally can't believe that worked out.
I showed up and said some crazy Charles Manson-y things, thinking that surely I'm never going to get out, and then my nemesis came and made them let me go. That's awesome.
Casanova sitting there like, oh, no, fuck, is there only one here?
No.
Don't they know? Do they not know yet? Did he not tell them?
Vizmat.
Jeffrey Rush kind of has that, plays the character that way where even Frankenstein can't believe that things work out his way. Because he's just kind of, he just is that guy. And he's just like, yeah, wow, okay, so cool. That was good that happened.
This is an unusual universe altogether. Like they went so far into building this universe around these characters that, as you pointed out so earlier, was not necessary. Like, we don't need them to live in a world where, like, there's a Vizmat at your coffee shop. But they do.
You know who I love? Bill Macy.
Yep.
Yeah, me too.
I just love the all hell out of Bill Macy. And there's a funny, he was in a video, or a film. They make movies. Called Bart Got a Room with Kate McCoochie.
They make movies there, don't they?
with Kate McCoochie, who is the world's cutest girl.
I saw Bart Got a Room, and I was kind of like,
it wasn't great.
But he was good.
You know who else? It was also Brandon Hardesty, the guy that does his reenactments on YouTube. In any case, Bill Macy did a little video on the set with Kate McCoochie. I guess they both play ukuleles.
Yeah.
And they both they wrote a little
that
song.
I've seen, yeah.
And it's just fucking Bill Macy and the world's cutest girl sitting there just going, just playing a little ukulele song together. It's the most adorable thing I've ever seen.
Does Kate listen to the show or know you? Or
I don't think so.
Oh.
Ooh,
I'm not positive.
I bump into her all the time. I'll have to tell her she has a fan.
Sax works at Meltdown.
I do. Where nerds go.
Yeah. And who are you talking about?
Kate McCucci.
Who is half of Garfunkel and Oates. If you watched Scrubs, which I don't think you did, she was the Gooch.
I've heard of Garfunkel and Oates, though. I've seen their stuff.
Yeah.
Fat, pregnant women are smug.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
The brunette of the two of them. Although Ricky is cute, too.
Fair enough.
Since we may be talking to them directly, let's just...
Yeah.
They're both cute in their own... Yeah.
I just wanted to tell you guys that you were great in The Wizard of Oz. To bring this back to movies.
Who's this, the waitress?
Claire Forlani, for those playing the home game.
As smug waitress number six.
Yeah.
My friend
Chad. She was a thing for a little while, wasn't she?
Yeah. Chad Peter. Yeah, she was in Mallrats. She was in Basquiat. Motherfucker, do you speak it?
No.
Chad Peter has this theory that beautiful people, but he says beautiful women, and it's true across the board.
You made it non-sexist.
Beautiful people are just 1% off from mutants. Like, they are so, like, yeah. Uma Thurman, Angelina Jolie, like, yeah. 1 degree off from just looking like a mutant.
Yeah, it's true.
Emily Browning in Sucker Punch doesn't look like...
Yeah, that's not a person. I have had the privilege of seeing Elizabeth Hurley in real life, and 10 years ago, when it was even more striking, and literally was like, that's not a human person. That's not a human being. She's too perfect. And yeah, so there was something. She was the uncanny valley. She was like...
You were looking at her and freaking out.
And going, that's not a real human
It was like
being.
Hanging out with Resident Evil.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like she was grown in a lab somewhere.
The movie Resident Evil.
To mess with my mind. I mean, she's just phenomenally beautiful. She's like literally, tie me to the mast, here comes Liz Hurley. She's just amazing to look at.
My mast.
And so I totally, I kind of subscribe to that thing.
The Odyssey, look it up.
I was going to say, my mast was already tied to finish the
joke. And there's Eddie Izzard. Kind of still a transvestite. Hard to tell in this movie who's a transvestite and who isn't.
He had not broken at all
No, he wasn't a thing.
Comedian here. Yeah.
Disco transvestite.
Yeah.
Running, jumping, climbing trees. Loving John Travolta.
Yes.
And using apparently a multiculturally labeled payphone.
Everything's multicultural. There's Cyrillic.
There's also a lot of
Japanese
characters all over the place.
So we're to believe
this is Firefly.
The future?
This is Firefly, basically.
Yeah, this is presumably the future.
This is a mix of Blade Runner and Firefly and Watchmen and the Ben Stiller Show.
They're going to get sponsored by Blue Sun later.
Yeah. I think that's why it works, though. It's mixed so heavily that you're like, I don't know what's happening. It's a new thing now.
I feel like they could have spent less on the budget, though, to make this weird post-apocalyptic strange universe.
In the chat room, Strangeland says, Disco Transvestite's my new band name.
Yep. Great name.
Isn't that a lyric in a Marcy Playground song? I'm kidding.
This is kind of the future of the past. It's kind of like, it's what comic book worlds look like 20 years ago, the future, with, you know, everything is neon, and some of it actually came true. And
there's Zeppelins over the cities.
Yeah, Zeppelins is somehow...
Dude, I'm
future.
Fucking really? Holding off. I'm carrying a torch for that, because we're going to have Zeppelins.
Yeah.
If it was a good idea 80 years ago, and it was a good idea 20 years ago, it's going to be a good idea in 15 years, and finally the Chrysler Building will have merit.
And as we all know from that picture, it was a good idea 80 years ago.
Well, filling them with hydrogen was the
have you seen
idea.
That? Have you seen that meme where it's just a manatee in black and white in the sky,
oh, the
and it's on fire?
Oh, the huge
manatee!
Huge manatee.
and as we said in The Fly, the gold blue manatee.
This is one of those things where some movies can get away with a not very successful matte painting, and this is kind of one of those movies. Kind of like you kind of expect it to sort of, you know, have.
We all saw that coming.
Yeah, just back up.
By the way, this was a test audience change. Initially, it was a baby.
Yeah, a little too dark.
He just rolled over a stuffed animal, ripped its head off. People at home.
So this, you know, I think this is amusing that he comes home. You know, the superhero has to come home to the wife, and you know, you're late again. What are you doing? You're not.
By the way, this is by calling it out. I'm
like
cheapening
giant
it.
Giant Peggy Bundy hair and stuff.
By calling it out, I'm cheapening it. But I love how effortlessly and how uninterested this movie is with the fact that there's an interracial couple.
Yeah,
they don't even refer to it.
Yeah, it's not a thing.
It's not a thing. I love it. More movies, please.
But also, did you see that the picture of him and his kids is like him and the one actress they cast is his daughter and then three photo amalgams of those two people?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a little photoshopping going on. It's
What happens if you cross Bill Macy with the lady who's played a judge in every movie ever?
Yeah. Well, that's actually the other thing.
You get Reginald Bell Johnson. Ah!
They don't. I'll say they don't. They don't make a thing of the interracial couple or anything. But because you know this character, you're like, wow, there must be fucking something crazy beneath the surface of this guy to have landed her as a wife.
Yeah.
If he talked her into being his housewife,
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's got something going on that we're not seeing.
It's a thing.
Next up, Angela Bassett.
It's a thing I deal with in scripts that I've written and scripts that I read. It's like sometimes the script will say a character is black when there is no reason for that.
To which you say, oh, hell no?
Yeah, oh, hell no. Because there's no reason for that character to be black. Their race doesn't actually have anything to do, unless the character's going to say, oh, hell no, or anything like that. And I've done that before.
I've known white guys that say that shit.
I've done that in scripts I've written where it's like, you know, in my mind, the character's black, but I don't ever say it because it doesn't actually matter. But the opposite is true. We don't know from this, you know, we haven't seen the script of this one, but it's like, does the script say did they just go, well, the best actress that came in was black, and
you
got to
be careful about that.
Who cares?
Though, you probably should keep putting black on the character if he's in your head is black and you're writing with that in mind, because you never know, they might cast Rainn Wilson or something, and then something has gone horribly wrong.
They might cast a woman, and if it doesn't matter, it doesn't matter.
Hey, that sucked, an alien.
At the same time, the you know, knowing a number of actors, it's like. And ethnic actors, it's like you should put that in there because otherwise the casting director will just assume they're all white and just go for that. So you gotta say black so that the black guys get a chance at it.
Right. Well, also, you need to protect yourself from casting Rainn Wilson.
Yeah, true. You need to avoid that. One of my favorite casting notices we ever did was the one for Ark, where we're casting for the third role, and it's like, okay, any gender, any race, anything goes, any age. The only thing is you have to speak a non-Latin based language. Talk about a wide open casting call. And boy, did we get a wide open casting call.
Dude, fucking Nian Num came in.
Yeah, it was amazing. We didn't we should have specified human, but otherwise, you know, it was really a fun casting call.
We brought this up, but that's a puppet with a vagina face. What up, Jim Henson? Moving back to Mystery
Men. You don't mean what we're looking at
was
here.
Was it Jim
right?
Henson?
No. Whatever.
It was The Creature Shop. Phil Tippett.
Tippett. Oh, shit.
The Creature Shop for the movie, not The Creature Shop. Rick Lazzarini.
He has installed this disco ball specifically so the disco gang can enjoy themselves.
No, he's been in prison for 20 years. This is, you know, the height of style he went to prison, when he went to the mental institution.
Yeah, fucking Eddie Izzard. What up? What up?
And now you know how you're in sync or not if you're watching the movie.
Yeah.
If he just John Travolta'd on the whats and ups, then you're in sync.
Yeah. So, yeah, see, he's got phonograph records. That's how long he's been away.
By the way, at which point does a pompadour stop being impressive and start being scary?
Never.
There's a movie called Johnny Suede that crosses the line.
There's a clown named Bello with a 9-inch pompadour.
Brad Pitt's first movie ever, Johnny Suede. Check out that pompadour. Bit much. Bit much.
Dude, you could do a pompadour mullet and have the fucking bead on awesome.
Then you're awesome in the front, party in the back.
Them. How does a pompadour mullet work?
I don't know, but Bijou Phillips seems to make it work.
It's a pompadour mullet.
Okay. This is an amazing set. Mm-hmm. It's quite something. I don't know if I like it, but it's amazing.
This is just Ben Starr's bathroom.
Yeah, true.
It's all, like we were talking about with the extent of the world. It's like you look at it, and I think just watching it, you almost don't appreciate it. It falls into the background because you're so used to seeing stuff like that. But it's like, no, that wouldn't have... Like, nowadays, it'd be, like, 3 feet back and then blue screen. But, no, they had to build all that shit into the distance. Maybe they did some forced perspective. I don't know. But that was all a build. They didn't blue screen any of that crap in. If there are any blue or green screen shots in this, we will notice them. certainly.
This is 99. It's not King Kong. There are blue screen shots and digital shots. But
this is the year The Matrix came out, Michael.
Yeah,
we noticed those too for the most part.
That's a good point, I guess. Why was this movie poorly received?
I think people just were like, "What?" Like,
was a little bit before. This was kind of clipping on the quick of the superhero thing. Yeah, it was a little too.
And it's a little, you know, you look at this movie and it's hard. I can see this being a hard movie to sell. This is hard to sit down and go, "All right, so there are these guys, and it's a world of superheroes."
Smash Mouth. Your argument is invalid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, now you're a rock star.
Well, you know, this movie would have done a lot better if it had come out after, like, a good 6 dozen comic book movies. So you would have established the universe you're going to trope into.
Pitch me on this movie.
It's hard to. That's my point. It's hard to sum it up. It's like, this is about the losers in a superhero world. I liked what he said. It's like if superheroes were celebrities, this is about the D-listers who are desperate for attention. You know, but they get their shot at it. I guess it's not that hard to pitch, but I imagine it would be hard to kind of cut a trailer that you can look at and go, oh, I get what that is. You know, it's more a movie, you cut a trailer and you go, what the fuck just happened?
Yeah.
Ben Stiller's like running around screaming and training Ruffalo through a bowling ball skull thing and what? It's the kind of movie you got to watch to appreciate.
I would say the trailer for this was probably, look at all these famous people.
Oh,
and
yeah,
that was as
that's
far
probably
as
the other problem.
Nice. In Greg the chat room, Frank says, the League of Ordinary Everymen.
The League of Ordinary Gentlemen, yeah. That's good. That's true.
By the way, I had those rings. I affected those rings for a long time. Yeah. And,
is that right? Are they
in high school?
Okay, we had Jake Lloyd on when we did The Crow, and he was like, dude, I did that every day. I'm like, oh, no, not you two.
They seem like they'd be inconvenient.
They are, and you can't really bend your knuckles. It's a lie.
The last time I saw rings like that was a couple weeks ago when we did Chronicles of Riddick.
Yeah.
All the necromancers, all the necromongers were wearing those rings, too.
That's sort of... Wow, I wasn't about to make it. Just an awful joke that wouldn't have worked, and it was really mean.
Go on.
It's the kind of shit that John Doe would have put on Leland Orser to have her finger fuck her.
Oh!
He finger fucked her. Like,
you could have phrased it better, but I see where you're going with that.
I got to point out here that
do some revisions and get back to us.
Yeah. The character that is based on marketing is a great way to include product placement in your film and make a point about it.
Yeah.
Like, they just got...
Don't tell Morgan Spurlock he does not need encouragement.
Look at all the money they're making every time we look at that character.
But do you think they would? Do you think it would go back to like, oh, but it's the villain, so that's not cool?
Yeah. Well, he's not the villain. He's the anti-hero.
He's
the good guy that we don't care about.
He's not good, though. I mean,
he's
an anti-hero. We'll give him an anti-hero, I guess.
I like him. By the way, props to Greg Kinnear, Mr. Talk Soup, because he's playing this character that is a douchebag, kernelly, and then he's a douchebag to our heroes, and I still like him.
Yeah.
I still watch him, and he's like, okay, wait. What's the plural of nemesis?
Nemesis. Nemesis, yeah.
He goes big on it, and I think he lands. I like it. I buy it.
He's kind of doing his thing that he does, and he's done quite often.
Greg Kinnear has a thing?
Oh, yeah. He's almost always that guy. Except the one time when he did...
He's charming and articulate?
When he did As Good As It Gets, he played a different kind of character and got nominated for an Oscar.
God,
but,
this lady has it... Speaking of playing the same character, this lady has it made.
Yeah.
She just gets to be that character and just scream into a camera at her chin with, like, the hair coming right at us.
The babushka goateed lady?
Yeah, with, like, the mole with the, like, 3-foot-long hair coming right at us.
Yeah.
Here's a question for you.
Just be glad it's not a 3D movie, dude.
Yeah, exactly.
How many movies has she been in?
I don't know, but
I think
she looks like the woman who was in The Goonies, but that's not the same woman. She's not the throw mama from the train actress.
Didn't she play John McClane in Die Hard?
Yeah,
I believe she did.
Oh, God, stop right. opening your mouth.
Yeah, I'll have to look it up because I might be full of shit, but I've seen that character a lot.
Yeah.
We have a thread on the forums about characters you don't see anymore. That one.
That's the horrifying old lady.
Yeah.
That's because America has gotten more and more obsessed with everyone in our movies being attractive, even the unattractive people.
Or actually, I would say that's always... What has Hollywood not been that? It's just that you're not allowed to mock anybody. You can't make fat jokes anymore. You can't make, you know, oh, she's really ugly. Let's do a joke about how ugly she is.
Everyone's like, we can't do that, and all the ugly people are like, hey, wait, where'd our roles go?
I used to be able to work more.
Family Guy cut to Clint Howard sitting at home sad.
Yeah, I want to know where this thing is. Where is the Herkimer Battle Jitney now? Tell me someone has this, because I love this thing.
Trey, the mythology of you has become very interesting, because now we have this whole thing where you were raised by wolves, and you want to be living in a tank.
I want to have it to drive around it.
Oh, okay.
The Herkimer Battle Jitney.
In any case, I was going to say...
It's the best non-lethal combat machine ever devised.
I interrupted you talking about Greg Kinnear.
We were talking about that character that doesn't show up very often. She was in that character, not her, but that character was in Drag Me to Hell and like Shutter Island. Mm-hmm. But I guess it is now it's horror and terror movies.
Yeah, not comedy. You can't laugh at them. You can be scared of them.
That's because they're people too, man.
That's right. Ugly people need love.
Unless they curse you to hell, in which case, fuck them.
In which case, yeah, then you can kill them.
She's a person. Barack Obama will deliver her government-sponsored sunglasses. For oh, such just an awesome.
Can we stop for a second and talk about how awesome the name Casanova Frankenstein
is? It's my handle on an online chat room group.
nice.
I needed one, and I wanted one that would be like distinctive. And like, Casino of Frankenstein. Just one of them. Sort of, again, the best villain name. Like, I'm just going to take two.
Is this the sort of online community
names.
Where if your avatar or if your username was Fucked Your Mom, wouldn't have been distinctive enough?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's the internet right there.
Yeah.
Fucked Your Mom too. Oh, shit.
I needed something that was already dated. It wasn't too topical, so it would be like, oh, my God, you're totally still referencing that. You know, so and it's certainly long enough to type in when I have to log in.
I ain't going to get in that chat room on an accident, I'll tell you that much. Yeah.
Well, the joke is that when I signed up for it, I misspelled it. So I actually have to remember where the misspelling is.
Did you put the I and the E back?
Sometimes
wrong,
I don't get
it.
No, I transposed a letter and made it an R when it shouldn't have been. So it's not quite Casanova Frankenstein. It's or Frankenstein, as we like to say.
It's all the way back to Alan Tuck.
Yeah, it's crazy. So,
this is happening pretty quick. This is happening faster than I remember.
Yeah, it moves quick. It moves along really well.
Bear in mind, they have to get there, fail, go back home, be dejected, and then get the Sphinx to come in and teach them other stuff.
Right, but as far as, you know, the Captain Captain Amazing's already been kidnapped. Where he's never getting out of that chair. We're only going to see him one more time. And
sort of like As Good As It Gets.
Yeah.
Once he's in the chair, he's stuck.
Yep. And that was a reversal that I did not see coming when I first saw this movie. When they go to rescue Captain Amazing
and kill him.
And they destroy, they kill him.
I think also, though, this concept has now been done a couple more times. Like, we've seen sort of people approaching the idea of
Kick-Ass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Super.
Yeah, Kick-Ass, you know, 10 years later, got the recognition, if not the box office, huge box office, that this movie was going for and didn't get.
That is a great gun. I want that gun.
Where do you get those?
Now, I love Eddie Izzard as much as the next man and or person.
Yeah.
But, sorry, bud, just stay British. It's not working. I love you. It's not working. Stay British. Mm-hmm. Because it's so weird to hear Eddie Izzard fake an American accent because you don't realize it when you're listening to him, but he's not just British. He also has a very weird voice. And the voice comes right across through the accent, but the accent doesn't quite work. And it's just... It doesn't take anything away from the performance or from the character or from anything. It's not working, buddy. So now I have seen The Riches, and I don't recall if he's gotten better at an American accent since then or not.
Hmm.
I only watched it. It's like, you know, how many episodes of The Riches does it take to screw in a light bulb? I didn't finish it. but I don't know. I still love him.
Comparing this to Kick-Ass, I just looked up the budget on Box Office.
Yeah, I was going to say, what did this cost?
This was $68 million.
Yeah.
And,
in 1999.
Oh, fuck.
In 1999.
That's American dollars in 1999.
Yeah, and Kick-Ass was $30 million a couple years ago.
Yeah.
So the same thing.
In American dollars, yes.
Again,
but
as we've said about other movies recently, it's like they spent too much money on this.
Yeah.
It shouldn't have cost that much money.
Yeah, if this had cost as much as Kick-Ass, it would have at least, you know,
it would have been considered
done the
a
good
great,
business
a
that
niche
Kick-Ass
hit.
Did.
A
yeah.
niche hit, a success.
It would have made its money back in the foreign market, but only just barely, because I think it made $26 million in theaters and then another 3.9 overseas or something to that effect. So it would have actually made its money back, which would still not have been a success by any stretch of the imagination, but it certainly wouldn't have been. I mean, and again, the neons in the back of this shot are all unnecessary costs.
And custom made for no reason.
Yeah, and where are they now? P.S. Yeah. Again, I still want I love all these artifacts.
Probably
these
sports
movies.
Bars.
Yeah.
Hey, you guys enjoying your lake beer? No, what is that?
They're in Kinka Usher's living room to this day.
This movie has I'm going to get nerdy here. I love the photography and the color of this movie because it's saturate. It doesn't have a cast to it. Like most movies that have a lot of dark and colors tend to have a cast to them, like Fight Club or Seven have a very gold and green thing going on. And this is just a colorful movie, but it's dark. And I love the way it looks. And for some reason, my brain associates that look with the 90s. It might just be because now, everything has a cast.
It was before color grading.
It was basically. But the darkness and the color at the same time I always like that look.
They have Chinese coins there we just saw. They're using the Chinese, like, hollow center coins.
This really is doing, like, a Blade Runner.
There's, like, a whole fucking other world in this universe.
Which is unnecessary. It could have been done in the
Kick-Ass
universe.
Could have been Phoenix.
It is cool, and I think it's one of the... Well, obviously, it didn't work, but I was going to say it's one of the things that helps me get into it, because I look at this and I'm like, all right, it's this game is playing by its own rules here. I'm not. I know nothing about this world. Everything is just jumbled up and thrown up in the air, and it landed where it did, and I'm just going to accept whatever the movie tells me, as opposed to, you know, oh, this is our world, but this, that, and the other are different, and that's it. And then watching and going, well, then that kind of doesn't make sense when this happens, and yada, yada, yada.
This movie is taking place in the Firefly universe on Ariel. Okay. Off to the side. It's got the whole conglomeration of the Chinese and the American superculture with some other accents and cultures thrown in the sci-fi world. But we're not even giving a shit at all about that in this movie.
So we're saying that Joss Whedon saw Mystery Man and then totally ripped it off a year later and made a TV show out of it?
After Surrogates did, yeah.
Okay, sure. Here's Kel Mitchell. Kel Mitchell just did an Asylum film.
Did he?
Yeah, he's in the Mega Shark one. This is the sequel.
I don't want to seem insensitive because I'm sure this guy has feelings and like a debt history and probably animals love him. But does he still love orange soda?
Yeah.
Does he?
I know. That was
I'm
the
so
thing.
Proud of Kenan Thompson for ending up on SNL.
That was the thing about this. It was like Kel was in this and it's like, oh man, he's going to be the one to take off and leave. And then he disappeared. And then Kenan
he went to BET and he had like a breakdancing show for a long time.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
He was one of those people that the internet rumored was like, oh yeah, he totally died choking on like a stripper's dildo or whatever. Like one of those weird rumors.
Oh, it was actually, a Rod Stewart thing.
Actually, no, yeah. I take it back. Kel Mitchell was in Battle of Los Angeles. Nah. Not Battle of Los Angeles, but the Asylum version, Battle of Los Angeles.
I remember when all the black guys would dye their hair white. That was cool. Let me see that thong.
Oh my God. Every so often that song comes up on my iPod and I'm like, I'm okay now. Like, for a while it was played out, but I'm like, it's been so long. It's retro now, and it's a good song.
I am so bizarrely apologetic to pop music because I have a thing for melody.
Pop music.
Pop music.
Pop music.
Pop.
Everybody's talking about.
Over here we call it. Over here we call it soda. No.
soda music.
I'm a fag for melody, and pop music tends to have very catchy ones.
I agree. I really.
That's kind of the idea of it.
Yeah. I like pop music, although I have. We're talking about getting older. I did. I think at some point in the mid. You know, around 2005, I pulled the cord and I got off the bus. I'm like, I don't know what's going on anymore. I'm just going to stop here and enjoy what that was and watch it fade into the oldies stations. That's what I'm going to do now. Because I barely know what Lady Gaga and Justin Bieber are. Yeah. Like, I know that they are a thing.
If I didn't have Twitter, I wouldn't know that.
Yeah, exactly.
Twitter and Seth Meyers on SNL, otherwise I would have no idea.
I think the Invisible Boy plotline is the one part of this movie I really dislike.
It's weird because like we talked about before, it's like there's a fucking flying zombie bowling ball or whatever, and yet the Invisible Boy thing when the triumph finally comes, I'm like, I'm not sure I buy that.
Well, I do, just you know, apples and oranges. It's one of my things I really like about it because it goes to what I said earlier about how. The superheroes we think about are the ones who ended up having superpowers that actually had a value to them. Right. And the fact that, you know, even the other superheroes in this, you know, B team don't even buy that he has a superpower. It's like, wait, you're invisible when no one is looking at you. Yeah. How is that even possibly useful? You know, and then it's
including myself. Yeah. It's like, so how do you even know that that's the thing?
They find the one way where it's like, by God, there is a value in there.
Right.
There's something useful that he can do that makes that happen. You know, at the very end, and then of course the spleen. There's Paul, and
I knew that this movie came out right around high school. Totally knew that kid in high school. That everyone's like, oh no, we were just totally leaving.
Here he comes.
Sorry, we gotta go.
Well, the movie is now telling us that
I was that kid in certain groups, and yeah. I knew that kid in other groups.
The movie's now telling us that there's a level below these guys. There's the spleen and the Invisible Boy, and they hang out and they want to be as cool as the Mystery Men.
So Captain Amazing is Riff Trax. We are the Mystery Men. And then Mr. Spleen is sofa dogs. I'm kidding. That was a total joke, Pavlich. I was kidding.
Snap.
He has more episodes than us. He has seniority. Yeah. I'm just throwing shit around.
John Pavlich is the sofa dogs guy.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. So our all
I think
our,
if you go on Zarben, he's above us in top commentators.
All of our listeners are actually other people who also do commentary.
Yeah, yeah. Other podcast people.
Okay. Including but not limited to Zarben.
It's getting a little recursive now.
It's commentators all the way down, yeah.
Yeah, okay. That's fair enough.
In the chat room, they're all like, whoa, whoa, lol, burn. Wow.
Yeah, snap. So, yeah, east side, snap, west burn. Side. So the spleen is certainly a character that you can kind of, you know, the movie could have easily fallen apart. You know, and it's right on the line of, oh, yeah. God, you know, really? Seriously? You're going there?
He's got the fart powers. Okay. Yeah.
But and yet it manages to, for me, to get away with it and make it work.
Paul right. Rubens has apparently more than one character in him, but he doesn't have more than one level of intensity in him. When he does a character, he's going for the fences with that character. Right. Like in Blow, he's this really femme hairdresser coke dealer. In Pee-wee Herman mythology,
Pee-wee's Herman's head.
I think that's just him when he goes home. And then in this, he's the spleen. Now this one and the other two, they don't overlap in any way, save for one moment in Mystery Men where he yells as the spleen, and you get a little in it, and you go, oh, there it is. A little shimmer of light right there. I see the Pee-wee in you, sir.
He gets the best line in, and that's saying a lot, in a Joss Whedon script in the Buffy the Vampire Slayer movie, which is, kill him a lot, which is one of the only memorable lines from that movie.
He took my arm.
Yeah.
Kill him a lot.
Yeah.
It's a great.
So here we go. Here we have where everybody that all the filmmakers knew came in to do a cameo of one kind or another, which is great. And there's, yes, it's Dane Cook, ladies and gentlemen. Brace yourselves. It's Dane Cook before he was Dane Cook.
God, he's Dane cooking so hard.
And he's the waffler. Now, I do, I like to think that.
God, he's Dane cooking so hard.
Yeah, I like to think that these people came
in. Back then, we didn't know that.
Planning their own, you know, like, okay, come in and be a superhero like a bunch of comedians.
Yeah, come pitch us your superhero for the camera.
Pitch us your superhero. You know.
And just the funny ones got into the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're gonna, that's
there,
you know,
ladies and gentlemen.
Doug Jones.
Abe Sapien.
Wow.
Now, by the way, I didn't see his name in the cast. It's just that recently in the Diff Forum, we had a thing called Cool Vids, and there was an interview with Doug Jones out of makeup, and I recognized him the next day watching Mystery Men.
Wow.
Like, what the fuck?
Doug Jones, we were talking about, you know, Teller and everything earlier. Doug Jones, also very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool and approachable and... Like, he really appreciates that you recognize him, I think.
He's really fat.
He's huge.
I saw him at Comic-Con, and I was like, hey, I'm a huge fan of all the stuff you do. And he was, like, so blown away of being recognized. Like, he's like, oh, give me a hug. Like, he was totally.
I'll bet you Andy Serkis was like that for a little while, but yeah. I'll bet you he gets it now. Chloe has a massive crush on Andy Serkis. I don't know how the fuck Serkis pulled that off, but I think he'd be pleased to know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Because he spent his life being a weird-looking dude off-screen.
And this is one of the better jokes, is two girls dressed like Wonder Woman who get into cat fights. There might be something to that.
Yeah.
Because there is a superpower there.
Uh-huh. By the way, his name is sort of in the mix. You can't hear what he says, but you can make out that he's saying Radio Man, mm-hmm. which is a
Radio Man. Yeah. And that was Dana Gould for 2 seconds there. Mm-hmm. And then PMS Avenger, I think, is my favorite PMS Avenger, who can only work 3 days a month.
Played by Emma Stone.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And
then here she comes, my girlfriend in my mind of 10 years ago, but not today.
The the thing about
we broke up.
The thing about
we totally mentally broke up.
Is the skull? I'm with it on a story level and everything. I just don't think the prop looks very good. I don't. It doesn't look like a real skull. And part of that is that the ball distorts it and it makes it look fat in the back. Whenever the front is facing you, the other side looks like it's getting bent wide. But the actual prop itself looks a little shitty. It looks a little Moonlight Theater Hamlet.
I don't know. It's also a friend of mine worked at a bowling company when this movie came out, and said that it's actually very hard to cast something like that in a bowling ball.
Yeah, it is. They did make a limited novelty bowling ball.
It's easier to cast it in a sitcom or at least a commercial.
It's the teeth. The teeth are not.
There's also the eyes. When you see the eyes on light, you can see that it's just painted dark.
Yeah, that's weird.
Just the fact that you can throw a bowling ball and it stays above the ground for a minute alone.
Well,
yeah,
again,
that's a power.
Have you seen a comic book superhero of any kind? There's a guy who shoots webs out of his wrists in one of those goddamn things.
Well, yeah, and it flips around and stuff like that. It is very much like he was saying. It's like she is essentially the Dr. Manhattan here. She is the one who actually has a power.
She has a real power. She actually has. It's really more her dad's spirit or whatever is making it happen.
Yeah, but all of them are like, oh my God, you have a power. Yeah, we need
you're the
you
real
on
deal.
Our team.
You will join our cadre.
I never finished my thing about the Invisible Boy, though, is that his and the inevitability that his power would actually work, and in kind of the way it worked, was so obvious to me when I first watched this that I just got so over it on the way there. That when it finally happened, I got so sort of upset about it.
Really? I didn't realize.
Because I didn't see it coming.
I'm sure I should have guessed this was a thing, but you and Ed Doty and Jake Loiter are comic book guys for the purposes of just blind profiling.
yeah.
So I didn't realize
you step out of line and just go over there. Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize there was like indie hipsters for comic books where you're like, oh, I see what his power is going to do. Fag.
Yeah.
Well, there's underground comics and everything where
I never figured they'd be like, oh, I know what you're
I mean, Mystery Men would be one of them where, you know, the comics would be like, oh, yeah, I read this.
Yeah, it's totally
I read the comic it was based on. You probably never heard of it.
It used to be they totally ditched the main characters, Flaming Carrot. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a travesty, really. I mean, are you not aware of the death duels that go on between DC and Marvel fans? I mean, it's a battle to the
death. It depends on how you define hipster, because really, you know, Picard versus Kirk, that's fucking some hipster shit sometimes,
that's true,
too, depending
on
how you...
Now, speaking of comics,
Joel.
What is the... tell me about the source material.
I mean, it's just... It's basically the...
Was it a Flaming Carrot series, or was he just in it?
I believe it was part of the Flaming Carrot universe, and it was a sort of pseudo-team amongst that. But I will get you more information in just a second.
Pulls out notes.
Yes. I remember the most underground comics I ever read were kind of in the R. Crumb zone. There was one called Reed Fleming, World's Toughest Milkman,
nice.
Which was an actual comic.
R. Crumb is cool.
Yeah. And I don't know if R. Crumb did that one, but it was very much in his style and sort of was you'd see it next to the R. Crumb comics, same kind of thing.
My history with comics was I read Watchmen after the movie because I liked the movie, and I read Jonah Vasquez to get laid.
Yeah.
You could get laid by reading it? I read it like it's gone out of style and never got laid.
It's the symptom, sir, not the disease. It's the symptom of having read Jonan Vasquez that will get you laid.
Yeah.
With the right checks.
I read
you can be rolling in waves of Hot Topic pussy, son.
Mm-hmm. Hey.
And they all have a little leather satchel with Jack Skellington's face on it.
Nice. And they don't know what it means.
They have no idea.
I read a couple of pages of a Spider-Man comic off of a rack in a drugstore in 1967, and a very scary clerk very sternly told me to put it back unless I was going to pay for it.
And that damaged you for your whole life.
I've never picked up one since. So
But I'll bet you that clerk, if they saw you today, would be proud.
Yeah.
That you learned your lesson,
knowing
and
that,
never read a comic.
Yeah, never in my life.
In the chat room, Malty was like, thanks for that, T. Good tip.
Yeah, it was just basically just like a Flaming Carrot miniseries, if you will. And a lot of these characters are, you know, bastardizations of characters that were there, but there's all some basis in there. But I'm assuming that they made a lot of it funnier for the purposes of, you know, like they made a lot of the characters for the purposes of finding jokes. And I never read the original series, but I know they promoted Casanova Frankenstein from a one-shot villain the Flaming Carrot fought unrelatedly into the villain in this book. It wasn't part of the original Mystery Men plot.
Did you ever read those books? Saxifer?
Did I ever read the Mystery Men books?
Yeah,
but apparently
no,
not.
Like I just said.
Right on.
He totally looked it up on Wikipedia.
I unfortunately was not a Flaming Carrot fan at the time. I have become some since later, but I haven't read it all the way back.
Now here's that same underground thing. This is where the Terminator chased Sarah Connor in the police car.
Yep.
I don't know where this is, but it gets a lot of play in movies.
In the chat room, just to put a cap on this, Pavlich is talking about how he bought a Gurr doll at Hot Topic once.
Hi, baby.
And then the chick at Hot Topic was totally down with Pavlich. Ladies and gentlemen, I bring you to Johnny Vasquez.
Wow. Wow.
Anyway, I love this car so much.
Yeah, it's a Jaguar. It's Jaguar. Jaguar limo. It's fantastic.
Not the limo. The blue car.
Station wagon.
It's a Vette, isn't it? Yeah, that's a
Vette. Oh, a Vette. Pardon me. It's
this car is so dopey. It's like in the Goofy movie where he's driving
the Jaguar
a
Jaguar Hearst from Harold and Maude. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a Vette. It's a Vette limo. Beautiful.
By the way, unrelated asterisk. I've been watching Top Gear in England. Apparently, it's Jaguar.
Yes.
Jaguar.
Which is way cooler.
And schedule.
Yeah.
I actually like Zed better than Z.
I like Zed.
And I'm on the fence about H.
Yeah.
I don't know.
H is a little... That one. Yeah, I'm not sure on that one.
No, that one's got to go. Who won the bloody war anyway?
we fought a war, not have to say H.
Yeah.
Or H.
The King's Speech.
King's Speech.
Now, this scene is great because...
I think H is a H crime.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I used to live in Haight-Ashbury. This scene cracks me up because, of course, this kind of shows in the normal fashion what their powers do and don't do, which is not much. They literally just kind of mildly vandalized the car. That's their that's their all out assault, as they've managed to kind of be they're annoying. That's about the most they can do. And of course, Casanova, you know, completely ignores them, like, oh my god, these people. And yet they treat it as a victory for them. It's a great victory for
it
them.
It is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They fought and were not destroyed
by
him.
Did not get their ass kicked.
Yeah.
So it's like your friend who finishes a level of the game and he's like stoked that he finished the level. Mm. It's like, you know, there's a whole thing where you can win the game too, right? Yeah. I finished the level. I did not die.
I'm going to take a couple months off.
Fucking I rule.
That really, that fork thing is impressive though.
Yeah,
I gotta
see?
Say. It's like, I can't
Fun
do
fact,
that.
Fun fact, not CG. Just Hank Azaria, man.
Yeah, he actually can do that. That's he how he got the job.
I don't know how we live in a universe where Jeff Goldblum can make it happen for him and Hank Azaria can't. Because I think every role Jeff Goldblum had, Hank Azaria could have done maybe better.
Hank Azaria has 10 times the money in the bank that Jeff Goldblum
well,
does.
Yeah, he's all Simpsons-y at this point.
Yeah.
But
he's doing fine.
If you don't
and know, he was married to Helen Hunt and then wasn't. I mean, for heaven's sake, if you can marry Helen Hunt and then be okay not being married to Helen Hunt, I think he's doing all right.
Hank Azaria is so fucking cool.
He's a great, he's hysterically funny and he's a great actor. Like I said, if you watch, I wasn't,
he's quite good. Yeah, he's
as
really
huge
good.
A fan of the film Shattered Glass as a lot of people were, because they were like, Hayden Christensen can totally act. You see it? No, he can't. But
well, you can't tell from that movie one way or the other.
Right. Right.
But there was no blue screen, so there's no George to blame it on.
Right. But Hank Azaria is in that, and he's just a side. I love the just.
They're just being annoying. That's their frontal assault.
And then he finally is like, all right, I'm going to pull out my gun. That's it. He plays. He's
Cake or Death.
Yeah. He plays. What's his name? Stephen Glass? Glass something. Cause
he plays the editor.
He plays the editor, and he's just the put upon editor, and. You almost keep waiting for him to be funny, but he never does. He's playing a straight role.
Be Hank Azaria.
Yeah, and it's he's so good in it.
Wait, I've been in this restaurant. This is the Hop Louie that is the Hop Louie now. Hop Louie's in Chinatown here.
Hop Louie is referenced in. I
How
love
did
you,
you not
I love
forget
your
it?
What's that?
How did you not forget it?
Yeah,
good point.
Chinatown. It's also in I Love You Man. They referenced it by name in I Love You Man that they're at Hop Louie's.
Yeah, it's a shading on the skull that makes it look like a prop.
And
I
that
think.
It is not
yeah.
a skull. I mean, I actually think they could have found.
Yeah, it's not a.
They
real
could have gotten a goddamn
it's
skull.
A sculpture of a skull. It's like a
or
stylized
a cast
version
of a skull.
Of a skull.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. There's plenty of skull available. Yeah. It's
now, Trey, how are you feeling about the makeup effects on Mr. Rubens? Buy the pimples?
They're disgusting. Yeah, it's wonderfully disgusting. Yeah, she goes, not in a million years.
There's not enough beer in the world, sir.
Yeah, it is like, you know. And she doesn't even have to look to know that it's him because, of course, she smells him coming. So, yeah, she's the fact that she's arguing with her dad's skull. Mm-hmm. And her final punchline, of course, is after that she finally manages to kill the guy who killed her dad. She goes, okay, deal's a deal. I'm going back to grad school. Just crack me up. Just totally crack me up. But, the whole, you know, everything about this movie, you know, $68 million, you'd hope so, is well executed. And it's an amazing cast. I mean, you could have done almost any movie with this cast. I mean, you could have done an Oscar bait movie with this cast.
Except
that
for Kel.
Would have been crazy.
I'll bet you Kel doesn't have the chops.
No, there's probably five other black actors in Hollywood that would have been instead.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, totally. That would have been Sam Jackson, but otherwise.
I'm still off on Hank Azaria, and I wanted to ask you guys about this because it's something that's really, really true to me. It's been in my life my entire life, but I've never shared it. Do you ever have things where it's like you know of a weird personality from some other thing or from TV or from music or something and you want to make a movie just to cast them in it, just to see them do their thing?
Sure. Or just like to meet them.
I want to make a movie – like Hank Azaria doesn't really fall into that category because he is an actor. But I want to make a movie for Hank Azaria. I also want to cast Weird Al in something that's not funny. And I want to see Mike Rowe from Dirty Jobs play a superhero.
Interesting.
I could see Mike Rowe being able to deliver lines. And additionally, and not everyone knows this, Mike Rowe is also a fucking singer.
He's an opera trained, yeah.
Opera singer, which is just unfair.
Yeah. Now, the one great actor that we haven't seen yet, but here he comes, Wes Studi, ladies and gentlemen. It's like, this is one of the movies like really went over the top for me. Like, holy shit, Wes Studi is in this as well?
Is he the Sphinx?
He's the Sphinx.
I'm not a huge fan of the Sphinx. I like it's a character thing, not a him thing.
Not a huge fan of the Sphinx?
Well, his, you know, I get the joke that all of his all of his advice are these, like, palindrome platitudes.
Well, the Sphinx is so perfect for them because he is no... They idolize him, and he's not. There's nothing there to idolize, really. He really doesn't actually accept in the end. He kind of does get the job done. You know, he's like them. They idolize. He's a second stringer, but they idolize him.
Yeah, he's the second stringer, but a little bit better. He has some. He also has some chops, but useful chops.
Yeah,
for once, you know, with the telekinesis or whatever he just did.
And I mean, for heaven's sake, you know, the Magua. You know. Fucking Magua. It's the guy from Heat, for Christ's sake. And here he is in Mystery Men.
Magua.
Not Magui. Magua.
Magua.
Magua understand English very well.
Yeah, his malapropistic advice is...
Malapropisms in this fucking podcast now.
Yeah.
Malapropisms.
Look it up, folks.
This is the one scene in which I love and hate Ben Stiller simultaneously, because I love that he points it out, because I'm the kind of guy that even if it was the best advice ever... would point it out, being like, wait a second, all your advice is take first sentence, reverse, repeat in second sentence, but it's also him being a huge douche to someone who's really helping them.
So, well, yeah, it's like, he's that guy, but he's correct. He's right.
It's like, I just feel like going, shh, shh, you need this guy. But
well, coming back to, unlike other movies that we've seen lately that people have been sad that we didn't care for.
Don't talk to Trey about Zombieland.
As nutty or Scott Pilgrim, but there actually are subplots and plots and character things that intertwine in this movie that are progressing. And, you know, that you can say, oh, I didn't like it, I didn't care for it, but it's a better crafted movie than some of those other movies that are just eye candy, because this is what you're referencing is one thing is this is the beginning of the group is getting, you know, is going to advance because of this tutelage with the Sphinx and everything, but it's also going to start to fracture at the same time. And there's going to be a whole character, you know, schism that's going to fall. These guys are going to fall out and have to regroup at the end, you know, and all these things are happening as they go. Every one of these characters, you know, not some more than others, but every one of them has a plot line. You know, there's Hank Azaria's issue with his mother that's going to come up more and more. And then there's this Shoveler and his wife. And there's Ben Stiller has a girl he's trying to win. And, you know, all of these characters have goals that are combined with the goals of, you know, the uber goal of the whole movie.
So what you're saying is screenwriting is easy?
I'm saying screenwriting is easy, apparently, because this movie managed to do it and other movies seem to have forgotten it. But
there's like a status thing too, where like the Shoveler was always a sort of high status, and not high status, but like the Shoveler was always effective for what he does, and the Blue Raja always sort of somehow got the job done, and the Spleen is always sort of okay, and then sort of, you know, the Invisible Boy is a joke, but everyone else kind of makes it work, and Mr. Furious just steadily becomes clear is the one with the no power.
Yeah,
like
he
literally has nothing.
Yeah,
and it's like, as opposed to that sort of just being tolerated throughout, like they just basically, it drives him out of the team and he sort of has to actually fix himself.
He's being left behind because they are advancing and he's not. And of course, he is given the worst possible advice. If you can balance a tack hammer, then you can have a balanced attack. And he's like, that doesn't even make any sense. And I agree with him.
Dude, it's pretty Miyagi.
But at the same time,
I can see it working.
At the same time, I also see the Sphinx going, all right, well, his power is supposedly like rage power, so
I'm going to make him just make him mad.
I'm going to piss him off as much as I can and see how that goes.
Yeah. And then I did laugh at the non sequitur. It's like, okay, but why do I have watermelon on my feet? I don't remember telling you to do that. I thought that was just a great left field joke.
I will addend to my previous list of actors I want to see do a thing different than what they usually do. I want to see Saget do a deep indie movie dad role. I want to see him be, you know, Danny, whatever the
fuck
his last name
was. I've seen him in a dad role, but a deep indie movie, sure, why not?
Well, yeah, I know, but like Bob Saget now, where people who know Bob Saget now are just too young to have grown up on Full House. It's a new generation of people that ironically like him because he's just so damn filthy. I want to see real world, 56, 57-year-old Danny Tanner doing a serious role, like a, you know. I might find that appealing for the same reason I like George Carlin and Jersey Girl, where it's like, oh, but he's so mean and filthy in his act, but he can really do this. And Bob Saget started as an actor. Well, he started as a comedian, but whatever. Also, Bill Nye, motherfucker.
I want to see Bill Nye doing anything but appearing on the news to talk about like 9/11 or whatever they have him doing.
You know, he got booed in.
That was like 3 years ago. I don't know why that showed up on the internet again. But,
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Where apparently he was talking about how the moon. He kind of shoveled his own grave on this one, saying,
"Oh God, here we come! Here we come for you, evangelical Christians.
No, well,
the one for this episode.
I have no idea what we're talking about.
What happened was that Bill Nye
and 9/11. What?
No, 9/11. He basically what he said was, the moon doesn't create its own light. It reflects light from the sun. But he involved it in basically saying...
Oh, Bill Nye.
Bill Nye. The science guy. He involved it by saying, God created the two lights. It's like, no, because the moon isn't a light. The moon is a white thing in space.
Yeah, I guess he did kind of start it being the Bible is wrong. Yeah.
He didn't have to play that shit in fucking Alabama or wherever it was.
It was Texas, but yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that
same
happened
thing.
That happened in like 2009, and then it got on Reddit like it happened last week again for some reason.
Yeah.
Anyway. I love this new era we have where there's a bunch of like, not rock star scientists, but it's like Twitter rock star scientists.
Yeah, at least scientists that people are aware exist.
Yeah, like Phil Plait and Neil Tyson and Bill Nye, I guess, has been around for a while. But those guys, and Richard Dawkins. Well, Richard Dawkins, too, where it's like these people that are intellectuals that are fucking nerds getting, you know, their TED Talks and stuff. It's just cool. I love the internet for this sort of thing.
Yeah. It was happening, but now we get to know.
Yeah, now we can have access to it. Yeah.
And to think, it all started when fucking Phil Plait could not handle Armageddon.
Would Alton Brown count as a modern?
I love Alton Brown so much.
Yes, Alton Brown would totally count. Alton Brown should have been one of the mystery men. The chef.
he makes
delicious dishes with the power of science.
I recall a time a couple years ago when Trey was dealing with a potential offer to be the host of a series where he's like, if Alton Brown can do it, fucking me. Look at this guy. I'm like, you're so right.
No, it wasn't Alton Brown. It was the Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives guy. He's got bleached hair. He's a big fat dude. And he just goes and eats fried food for a half hour every week. I'm like, I could do that job. I could totally do that.
He has a restaurant in San Francisco where they do American sushi. They do like French fries and sushi and stuff like that.
Is it good?
And it's okay.
Sounds awesome.
Okay. There's a roll named after me on it, so I'm serious.
That like, one's good.
My recipe. I enjoy it.
In the chat room, Strangeland opposes our mythologizing of Bill Nye by saying he met him and he was a douche.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and I've actually heard that before about Bill Nye.
No.
I've been told by someone who knows both of us that,
I refuse.
That I'm much cooler than Bill Nye.
Oh, fucking can't reach, high five. Bam.
Give me a high five. It was a 12-year-old girl who said I was so much more fun to be around than Bill Nye.
Well, everyone knows 12-year-old girls are never wrong about anyone.
Okay, that is a damning indictment of Bill Nye.
Take that,
and
Bill.
Awesome for you.
Take that now.
Hit girl thought you were cooler.
Learn it, exactly.
I'm going to have a moment of silence for my childhood fantasy about Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Well, apparently, and I'm going to go with, I'm assuming he's really sick of having been Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Yeah,
he wants to be Bill Nye the Science Pundit.
Ah. Hey, look, it's the same place from Zombieland.
Strangeland said, he went up and said, I'm a fan of yours. I think everything you've done is awesome. And he was basically kind of fuck off about it.
Mm-hmm.
Which, celebrities,
it does depend.
Happens.
It depends on the day, and
it
depends
on a
lot of things.
Do you think this is where a lot of the $60 million went? Is there like, there was no disused amusement park in a salt lake?
Sizzix
Road.
Yeah. Well, you can rent carnival rides from various places. And surely, I guess there's a boneyard somewhere. It does look a little...
Yeah, look at the budget on the show.
It looks a little created. I mean, it doesn't look like it's authentically all sitting there. But who knows?
That doesn't look like how you would have set it up to actually run it, and then it just got disused.
Now, one of the things that I enjoy about this movie is the fact that it's Tom Waits. And, you know, Tom Waits maybe, you know, mean a little something different to me than to people younger. But I was like, oh, my God, it's Tom Waits. I can't believe it. And Tom Waits is a singer who, you know, specializes in – he was the first person I ever heard say 40 years ago, well, I'd rather have a – bottle in front of me than a frontal lobotomy. I don't know if it's his line, but he does these, you know, if you ever hear him sing, it's quite distinctive. He's one of those singers you go, I can't believe that guy has a singing career. But he's just well known as a composer who writes very interesting songs that are, you know, it's, you know, kind of underground. You probably wouldn't get it, but
he's an absolutely amazing musician. Better in Coffee and Cigarettes.
Yes.
I was
in the chat room. What are we talking about? Who?
This dude.
Oh, is he a musician?
Yeah, Tom Waits is.
Oh, that's Tom Waits?
That's Tom Waits.
I've never had a face for Tom
Waits. You've heard of Tom Waits. That's what he looks like.
He's done a lot more than you'd think, too. He actually got like really into it as an actor for a little while the last couple of years.
He's done many things, yeah.
He could have sucked up Ron Perlman's sloppy seconds.
True, true. Many people think this is Ron Perlman. Many people, if you go to IMDb, the home of movie idiots, and read the thread about a guy who continues to insist that this movie was actually directed by Tim Burton and that the director of note clearly doesn't exist because he has no other credits and came from nowhere because this person never heard of commercial directing. But there's an entire thread about a person who insists that this movie is actually directed by Tim Burton and the actual director doesn't actually exist.
There's not enough black and white in it.
Yeah.
Now,
this isn't kooky enough
to
be
nowhere
Burton.
Near like a Tim Burton.
You know, my specific problem with IMDb and commercials and that they're not on there is not that I can't see what all commercials Michael Bay has done or whatever. It's that I have like 15 or 20 credits on IMDb, but I've worked on like 30 commercials, not on IMDb. God damn it. There's a lot of work. That's not going, it's going unsung. Now, there should be an IMDb. Well, I was part of a team, but yes, mostly me.
And actually, for a lot of people, it needs like we also would need an IBDB, which is because you go, yeah, whatever happened to that actress? She was really big like 6 years ago.
She's on Broadway.
She's a massive Broadway star, and you just aren't seeing her anymore on movies. But you know, it's not like she disappeared or died or her career ended.
She is so crazy pretty in this scene.
Yeah.
And so doesn't really pull it off that well in many films. It's just like they just really got her.
Claire Filani?
Yeah.
Again, with my mutant theory.
Yeah. No, she does sort of have like a weird mouth. She has a little bit too big.
She looks like if you put some skin on an emoticon.
Yeah. Ah, nice. Clever. She has one of those faces that.
And the mouth was using that weird squiggly bracket.
When you're young, it's something to watch out for. Gentlemen, I'll tell you from experience, gentlemen and anyone listening to the sound of my voice, when a young woman is exotic, that's great. But later, that's going to become bizarre. Exotic ages into bizarre. Mm-hmm. So
the more you know.
Just like people who are fans of Kim Kardashian have never seen an Armenian woman over the age of 60. They're about 4 feet tall. Yeah. They're spherical. I mean, like, I don't know how they get there from where they are now.
If you go to Korea.
In 5 years, Kim Kardashian's going to look like you.
Yeah. In Korea, I was always struck by the fact that the women who are 25 are just all uniformly beautiful, and the women over 50 are like so bent over that they literally have hats with casters on top of their heads because their heads are scraping the ground. It's like, what? Like, when does that kick in? There's a moment when you're like, "Good night, honey," and the next morning, ah, oh, it happened. Oh.
This is one of my favorite and one of the most devastating things I've ever read. I think he's talking about Claire Forlani. He says she has a face for a Soundgarden video.
Oh. Okay.
Black hole sun. Okay.
Oh, black hole sun. Now, here's a fun little conceit that they have a lot of fun with, the fact that this fella builds weapons, but only the non-lethal.
Although I'll point out, not a perfect movie because they put a gun on the mantle with the tornado thing and it never comes back.
But the rest of them do.
The rest of them do.
The rest
but
of them
the tornado thing doesn't.
Yep.
I'll bet you it probably did, and they just cut it out.
Could be. Could well be. But the fact that he will only make non-lethal weapons, and his weapons, again, like them, his weapons sound ridiculous, and yet, of course, in the end, they do actually prove to be useful. There's what's it called? It's called the blame thrower.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which is kind of like, I think Hitchhiker's Guide totally stole the point of view gun from this mm-hmm. concept.
Oh.
Yeah, no, with no kissing, no. And the idea of the based on dry cleaning technology that makes your clothes shrink up.
On you.
Yeah, which is, you know, again, ridiculous. Well, and I have seen worse in real comics that we're trying to be serious.
And the good point, too, being that, like, in the event that you made these weapons, you would be so obscure you were living in, like, an old amusement park.
Because would you live?
Yeah, the government's not paying any money for that.
Hey, look, it's Universal Studios. We're on the Universal Street backlot. Mm-hmm. You can't not do it. You have to be there.
It's funny how recognizable it is
it really
once you've
just,
been on
it
the
kind
tour.
It is, yeah. It's surely there's a compilation on YouTube somewhere of the 10,000 movies that street has been in.
One of my favorite, always used, if you ever notice it, you will then recognize it in every other movie, but you generally won't, is the American Apparel Factory at about 3rd and Bay in downtown Los Angeles.
I've been there. I've been to the factory.
Fucking, you've been there. On film, it's generally, you see the between the buildings section. There are these two, maybe five-story industrial buildings that just look like a big brick with a series of windows, right? Just four levels of windows. And there's another one 50 feet across adjacent to it. So it's taller than it is wide, and it's this long corridor of windows like that. It shows up, for instance, in Transformers. When in the first Transformers movie, when all the Autobots show up and Witwicky and Megan, oh God, are standing there, that's happening in that scene, or in that location, and it shows up all over the place. And also the downtown tunnel with the reflective tiles.
Second Street Tunnel, yeah.
Second Street Tunnel. Independence Day right off the bat, boomer. But everything else, too. Additionally, I hear New York shows up in movies occasionally.
Real New York? Sometimes. Oh, sometimes.
Vancouver.
It costs so much money.
Yeah. All right. Now they're going out. This, following a very standard construction of, you know, going out on the next mission, having learned some lessons and gained some skill.
But not enough.
Not enough. It won't quite be enough.
But yeah, this is going to Cloud City right now.
This is the equivalent
of
going to Cloud City, where
things are going to go horribly
wrong. Someone's
going
to get encased in carbonite. Yeah. That's how this is going to end.
I want a shoveler costume.
I think that would be an awesome costume.
If I bumped into you at Comic-Con wearing that outfit, I would give you a fucking high five.
Awesome.
I'd be like, look at this guy right here. Hell yeah.
The shoveler. I love this guy.
That was the thing. Chloe was talking about this after Sucker Punch. She's like, oh, we're going to see so many baby dolls.
I can't wait to go to Comic-Con.
We're going to see so many. I'm like, I don't know, man. I have no idea. She's like, it would cost $5 and chicks want to be hot. Yeah. I'm like, but no one really likes Sucker Punch. I don't care. Yeah. It costs $5 and chicks want to be hot.
Yeah.
There are a lot.
And at that point, I realized I don't want to argue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I totally want to see the Sucker Punch.
And then I was like, oh, you are right. Let's just go home now.
It's like, nobody move. It might still happen.
No.
Don't say any more. It could work. So there is, it's wacky way, there is even a little character moment here where he can't say what he's feeling.
Yeah. Because he has to pretend that the rage is rising even though he doesn't
really
feel
anything.
Yeah,
and it's like, even though that's not what it is, it's nothing to do with that.
And the other guy knows, but he's like, whoa, chill out.
Yeah.
We're cool.
Just playing along, like, all right.
Yeah.
You can come with us.
Exactly. That's the sign of the forgiveness there, is the fact that he plays along. Yeah. He pretends that he's scared for a moment.
So here comes your Michael Bay cameo.
This is, okay, and also CeeLo. Are you serious that is CeeLo?
CeeLo, yeah.
Because CeeLo, I was watching this the other day, and I was like, that guy looks like CeeLo. But then I immediately went all fucking pansy on it. I was
hell
like,
no.
Oh, no, they don't all look like CeeLo. Not all fat black guys with great teeth are CeeLo. That's profiling. It's not CeeLo, apparently.
It is. It's CeeLo. Yeah.
But this is the pretty, and the guy that talks of the frat boy group, the pretty looking
the
guy, is Michael Bay.
Ladies and gentlemen, Michael Bay.
By the way, I had forgotten. I always do forget. And he looks better here because he's younger. Now he's getting, you know, he has 50-year-old face where it's a little bit, it's sort of sunken, but he's still a handsome guy. But Michael Bay is a hot motherfucker. That's a good-looking man.
Yeah. Well, he's, you know.
And Zack Snyder ain't no slouch either. What the hell is going on?
Zack Snyder
You're
was,
learning about yourself, I think.
Yeah. And I've got hair in weird places.
Yeah, and feelings. Weird feelings are strange and disturbing.
So my question is, what was the fraternity's conceit? What is, are they the rapiest fraternity?
Like,
I think it's just the guys from Karate Kid.
It cracks me up that they are literally the frat boys. I just thought that they were just the douchebags. I said they're just annoying.
The frat
boys,
professional douche.
Yeah, they're just the worst people. They're just the annoying.
Dude, can we bring our brewskis?
No.
Fucking adorable.
Well, all these super villains, Big Tobacco. That's one of the villains. It's great. Mm-hmm. So, the fat boys. Yeah, there they are.
I'm going to throw your mind for a loop. Michael Bay doesn't not resemble Bill Nye, actually.
No, that's true.
That's weird.
He's going to look like Bill Nye when he gets older. He is.
It's fucking strange. So that's CeeLo.
That's CeeLo.
Are you shitting me? I saw that guy and I was like, it's CeeLo. No, it's not. Yeah. Not all black people look alike.
The guy who looks like CeeLo, but younger, that's because it is.
I see you driving around town with the girl.
Oh, God, I love that song.
That's the best song. Who was it that printed their iTunes? Someone printed a little printout of their iTunes. They bought that song on iTunes, and so they just printed their receipt. Just said, you know, fuck you, iTunes. Same to you, iTunes. Yeah. Yeah, no, that's the most genius song. That's a song for the internet era. That is the that is the killer app song for the internet era. My God, they
Although I also, if you're not familiar, I love the Lily Allen song "Fuck You," just as poppy and fun, but more British. Also younger and female.
Oh, nice,
Great song, though.
Yeah. With a slightly different target to the angst. Slightly.
Did you know that Lily Allen has a third nipple?
I did not.
Are you intrigued?
Go on.
Less than you might imagine.
It's a little Total Recall.
This is relevant to my... I've encountered one of those in real life, but not on Lily Allen.
Was it on her hand or something, or was it sort of where it should
have
been?
No, it's where it's about where it ought to be. All right. Yeah.
Is it where James Bond has one when he meets
Scaramanga? Yeah. It's sad that we both immediately went to Man with a Golden Gun.
Yeah.
But sad, but
my ska
sad
band
in a good
in
way.
College was named Scaramanga.
Oh man. I thought you were gonna say third nipple.
No, but that'd be great too.
This is pretty, this is basically the end of the movie, and we've got, 45 minutes left. This is a big sequence.
It's not quite the end of the
is
movie.
Is it not?
Because they have to kill Captain Amazing, then they retreat again. They get the
oh,
battle.
Oh, that's
the
right.
Battle
they didn't get into Captain Amazing.
Yeah, this is the Captain Amazing scene coming up,
which is
one of my favorite
scenes. That's what I was saying earlier in the movie, about 40 minutes ago. I was like, are they really about to kill Captain Amazing? I don't remember it happening that quickly.
No, there's one of the few times that the movie kind of glosses over, kind of just takes an easy way out, is they're outside of – the first time they go to – the two of them or the three of them go to Casanova's castle, and the Eddie Izzard and the other guys beat them up on the front lawn. It cuts to them at the coffee shop.
Oh, right.
With no well, wait. They didn't get killed, and they just – what do they do? Just walked away afterwards?
Listen, son, we can do this the easy way or the hard way.
Yeah.
The easy way.
So it's just – it does kind of – well, wait a minute. Well, how do they just – they just beat them up, and then they just went home, and what happened there?
I want to start – yeah. Okay. I want to start slowing this insult for people that will get it. When I want to just fucking go, oh fuck you to someone, I'll be like, Biff is with your mother.
Oh,
Back Future 2 on them. Just fucking. Well, Biff is with your mother in the alternate 1985. It's better than Son of a Bitch.
That is pretty nasty.
And Biff is with your mother.
Biff is rich and powerful. This scene just cracked me up.
Your decadent is now dry.
I wish we had we don't have the subtitles here. I wish we had
that
the subtitles.
Very good.
I'd like to see the subtitles try to keep up with this scene, too.
Yeah, this scene is fast.
Everyone is improvising like crazy. The whole idea. No, would you say the two? Just flip it again.
Can we stop? Is there a reset button?
Hold on.
You said
wait.
We already did one. Do you want us to do another? Just flip the switch. But we did one.
Flip it. So the idea, the idea that Captain Amazing essentially brings his demise on himself by rattling them and just sort of, shouting out orders.
I love Bill Macy. This whole time he's just standing on the side, ineffectual, by the door, but he's holding up a pair of washers trying to see if, with the glasses, is that
he still has his suspicions. Mm-hmm. So this is a huge, a huge set. Gigantic set.
Mm-hmm.
$68 million. Okay.
And you see where it went.
You totally see it. It's all on the screen. You can't deny it's all on the screen.
That's good, Frank. I haven't heard that one either on the subject of disses. I haven't heard this. How's your wife and my kids? That's fucking, that's hard.
That's hard on the guy saying it, not the guy receiving
this,
it.
There's an old Benny Hill line scene was that,
Oh, shit. Strangeland's right. We mentioned Back to the Future. Now it's pushed back a month.
No. It's not. It's if someone asks us to do Back to the Future is when it gets pushed back.
Trey, can you do Back to the Future commentary, please?
See, there you go.
There it goes.
But that was an example. I don't think
people have been asking
us
to do a Back to the Future for now 3 years.
People in the chat are like, "Damn it, you!" Yeah.
To be fair, though,
they're going
to
mutiny on me, man.
Can't your review for Back to the Future happen whenever you wanted to chronologically?
That's right.
Wait,
oh my God!
Right?
You did a thing.
No, we should do it in. We should do it on November.
We'll go back and do it 2.5 years ago.
Yeah. November 12th, 2015. Now, there's a thing, and I had to correct someone on this, and I destroyed them, and it was amazing. It was a good moment for me. What is the apex in the Back to the Future universe as a date? Because there's 2 days.
The latest date?
The apex, where he says it's the apex of the space-time continuum. Everything happens here, or it could have been an amazing coincidence. He's referring to November 12th, not November 5th. He goes back on the 5th, leaves on the
12th. Yeah, the 12th is when all that stuff happens.
See, and people get confused, because in the car, he's like, November 5th, 1955, but they're talking about the 12th later.
Yeah. That's a hell of a little. That's a brutal death too.
Yeah,
you
it's
don't
nasty.
Even. They make sure in the movie they're like, no, he's dead.
I don't think he's gonna make it.
Yeah,
he's not gonna pull out of it.
Let's not get any confusion in the audience here.
Yeah. That effect probably cost $1 million at the time. This
probably
was made.
That melting
end
effect.
Up with this space jockey here.
Yeah, the first alien sufferer or whatever.
Yeah, and then he's made of toast.
Yeah, toast.
I got it.
Thank you. I was going to say, I don't think Bob and Tom is still a thing.
Yeah, I didn't catch the reference.
No.
But if you had Napster and you were looking for Weird Al stuff back in the day, you probably found Toast.
Yeah.
Fist bump. Dorkman feels me. And also Donald
Duck.
I love
the teeth. He turned into a pig.
He turned into a Big Daddy Roth character. That's fantastic.
But we saw his head completely turn inside out and become hollow in the middle.
Captain Amazing looks like Flavor Flav now.
And then he exploded.
That's just such a ridiculous. His mouth is up on his forehead now and shit.
And the villains are all happy. Hooray!
Because
one will stop us. So not only did they not rescue Captain Amazing, they killed Captain Amazing.
Right.
You know, talk about raising the stakes. Yeah, screenwriting 101. Stakes raised.
I like having a moment or imagining that Casanova has a moment where he's like, oh, well, that's not fun.
Yeah.
But all right.
No, it's still good. It's still good.
You know what? We'll make lemonade, guys.
I would love to see him actually give that speech.
Yeah.
When life hands you lemons, you make. They'd say something stupid. Michael Bay would go, blow it up.
Yeah.
Paint it green. You make lemonade.
Oh yeah. Also that. Yeah. Good. Yeah.
I don't remember when we brought this up, but apparently Michael Bay was brought on as a potential director for the movie Phone Booth, and he came into the meeting, and the first thing he said was, how do I get him out of this fucking phone booth?
Yeah, and they were like, get out.
Thanks for coming in, Michael.
Thanks for coming in. You can leave now.
I used to think Michael Bay made awesome movies, and then I jumped on the I hate Michael Bay bandwagon, and now I don't even ironically like him. I just want to give him a hug.
Well, you do your thing, man.
It's from Dogma. You really are just a simple creature, aren't you?
Yeah. You just Michael Bay the hell out of everything. That's just you can't Michael not Bay, Michael Bay stuff.
Can I fucking blow your mind for a second? Michael Bay is the Beach Boys of directors. Mm-hmm. He just wants explosions, cars, and chicks. Why do we love the Beach Boys and hate Michael
dun,
Bay?
Dun, dun.
It's
which Beach Boys song was about explosions?
It's called Explosions, Cars, and Chicks.
Yeah. It's from the Pet Sounds album.
Oh, wait. I was thinking of Jan and Dean.
Yeah, that's true. He is Jan and Dean. He's Jan and Dean rolled into one. I think he is the illegitimate son of Jan and Dean.
Didn't the little old lady from Pasadena explode? Was that the ultimate? That was the European fast. Version of the song.
Yeah.
I always wanted to do the commentary on a Michael Bay thing and just have him going, I'm sorry. I don't know.
Pop on the commentary and it's just Michael Bay going,
From what I understand, that is kind of the commentary for Batman and Robin.
Really?
Bill Schumacher going, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done that.
I don't know what the hell.
We were trying to make action figures, and I just went
too
far.
If you want to listen to the down in front commentary for 2010 Moby Dick, it's not far. It's not a step apart from that.
Hey, no,
there's a lot of moments you're just
apparently the
what do you want from me? Come on.
As I recall, the commentary for Monkey Bone was
Monkey
also
Bone.
A little apologetic.
Well, it was also
Henry Selick, right?
Henry Selick was also Henry Selick. No, not apologetic. Sitting there going, the studio fucked me. I didn't want that. They made me do this.
Awesome.
And just totally wow.
That's awesome.
Dude, we should do that. We should do a movie that we had nothing to do with and say that they fucked me on this. I wanted it to be that.
Sometimes they'll do that. Sometimes they'll allow that.
We should do that for Men in Black, too.
Yeah. Now, here in this scene actually is also great because where Bill Macy's character uses egg salad as his analogy for what they need to do.
Which is now basically the thing they do on Community every week.
Yeah, that's what I feel is Bill Macy's secret power. He calls himself the shoveler because he shovels
he's
shit.
He's shoveling it really good here.
Yeah.
It's not since the Team America dicks, pussies, and assholes analogy has there been such a great analogy.
But it's great, and it basically follows the all-time great speech structure, which is you make a reference that seems funny and offhand at the beginning of the speech, and then you bring it back to have meaning at the
end.
You
actually make it work.
You make it work.
And you're right. This is every episode of Community.
Fucking, this is Joel McHale right here.
Mm-hmm.
And they made a joke.
The poor man's Greg Kinnear.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was like the tractor beam on the Death Star.
I've always hoped that, that's probably not true, but I wish that this Woody Allen's first film was what happened?
I've always hoped. Well, no, I haven't hoped.
Yeah, no,
well, that's probably not true.
Yeah. And I'm not talking about in general. It's about a specific thing, but in general,
no, I haven't.
No, I'm sorry. I tried not to lie.
I've never hoped. I've never hoped. It's true. I admit it, because you know I learned early on. Because there was a guy when I was reading a Spider-Man comic, and he crushed the hope out of me at the age of 7, and I've never hoped since then. I've always, in my mind, liked the idea that one of Woody Allen's first movies that wasn't really a movie that he really did, per se, was What's Up, Tiger Lily, which is where he took a Japanese James Bond knockoff and redubbed it. And that was really one of his first movies that Woody Allen made, and shot some additional stuff and kind of made this weird kind of hodgepodge out of it.
So he did like the Kung Pao thing.
Yeah, yeah, he absolutely did in the early 60s. And it's called What's Up, Tiger Lily. And it is this amazing, amazing conglomeration of Japanese 60s James Bond knockoff movie with Woody Allen dialogue. Trying to be a James Bond movie. And the great thing about it is it's all about how the supervillain has stolen the world's greatest recipe for egg salad. And there's a scene where this is being explained to the hero. And he says, because, of course, whoever controls the egg salad recipe will control the world. And he goes, there's a pause, and he goes, don't ask me why egg salad. I have enough aggravation. But it's just a setup. It's like the ultimate recipe for egg salad is the secret to controlling the world. So I was hoping that this was like a reference with the egg salad here, but it probably wasn't.
I love this moment with his mom. And it's so – a lot of movies try harder to capture what a mom is in my mind than this movie does. And this movie sort of effortlessly gets it, yeah. Where she's sort of like, that's great. Do the accent again.
Yeah.
That's so a mom thing. It's so, okay, do you want some more forks? Now, that said, I will turn 40 in a few, maybe 40 years, and my mom will still be sending me boxes full of candy and shit on Easter.
God, I wish my mom would do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine.
After a while, you start missing that. Trust me.
Yeah, I'll be really sad the first time I don't get like a care package, which right now I open them and I'm like, oh, mom sends me some stuff. But it's sort of nice, you know?
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Woody Allen, this of course is you kids probably have no mental picture whatsoever of Louise Lasser. You know Louise Lasser. This is Louise Lasser, who was very very big in the '70s on a show called Mary Hartman, which was quite a big hit, a very strange faux soap opera.
This bedroom is the room from the end of 2001.
It kind of is. There's a monolith there. And then Louise Lasser kind of went away, and she kind of went off the radar for a while. She's one of the three episodes of Saturday Night Live that Lorne Michaels refused to allow into syndication because it went so badly. Because apparently she was pretty much drugged out of her mind. And so she
kind of sounds amazing.
I know. It's like it's not. It was Milton Berle, Louise Lasser, and one other episode of Saturday Night Live that was never released into syndication because they were so awful.
Yep.
There's
a wonderful...
not because the people weren't.
He says that like he was in the room when the decision was made. Oh yeah,
you
don't
even know who Milton Berle is.
There's go ahead, Trey.
It wasn't because of. The actors, you know, like they were a bad actor or whatever. It's because Milton Berle came in and just basically sabotaged the show. He train wrecked it. And then Louise Lasser was just so sort of out of her mind that the show was incoherent. There was one other one. I forget.
Andrew
Dice
Clay.
No, I don't think so. It was early. One of the early ones. But Louise Lasser is like, I'm still like, oh, it's Louise Lasser. She's still around. She's still funny. She's, you know, she can still do stuff. It's great. I'm so happy to see her again.
She didn't play the evil Jason Voorhees mom in the remake of Friday the 13th, did she?
In the remake? No, I don't know. Could have, but she does look like...
Dorkman is a Hitchhiker's Guide.
No, I'm sorry. It's not.
She look like Betsy Palmer a little bit now.
I think it was the remake for Freddy versus Jason, where it's like, your power is you never die. You can never die. That wasn't her.
I wouldn't know because I haven't seen it. But it seems unlikely, but I guess it's possible.
On the subject of SNL, there is a fucking tome of an anthology called Live from New York. It's like 900 pages.
It's great.
And it goes from like 74 when Lorne Michaels is trying to put the idea together and who he's talking to. Initially, it was going to be like the Lily Tomlin show again. And then all the way up till I think like 2002 or so. And it's just unbelievable. It's got interviews and it's set up basically where they got 3-hour interviews with everybody, all the cast members and all the writers throughout the entire thing, and also like the friends of the producers and stuff like that, and then just took their relevant snippets of a, like a paragraph anecdote or what was going on at the time and just laid them in order. And the book reads that way, and it's really, really, really interesting. And a lot of the things the stuff that stands out is you know, the behind the scenes-y kind of stuff, but also the when they have a train wreck episode, how it's almost like Studio 60. One of the interviews I recall, I don't recall who it was. It might have been Dana Carvey, was talking about how it was when this one particular train wreck episode happened, and it reminded me of Studio 60, where in the fictional show Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip, Felicity Huffman is hosting fake SNL, and all the actors in the show are like, "It's on you, babe!" Like they're all improvising and just getting out of the scene, and she's just like, they're all leaving her hanging
actually,
like an asshole.
Well, Felicity Huffman is in the pilot in the show where the guy goes nuts, and but it's Allison Janney who's
Allison
in the
Janney.
Disaster
you're right.
Show.
You're right. You're totally right. Oh, that's so funny.
And they're reveling is like, yeah, this is our disaster show for this season. It's going to be awesome. You know, and you're the host of it.
The plot of that episode is that the prop guys go on strike, which loses the cue cards and everything, and they just have to wing it, and all the props don't work.
It was not Louise Lasseter that you were thinking of in the horror movies.
Was it John Lasseter?
Yeah. It was in a wig. What a twist. Shyamalan.
Tricky.
Was it the future laser weapon, the Lasseter?
I doubt that still works. But this one does. So now they're gonna. This is and now they you know, they're following the cliched beats, but you follow them in a movie. In a movie, I subscribe to the theory. I hope. Well, I don't hope, but I subscribe to the theory that if you're the more outlandish the movie you're doing, the more bizarro the premise that you're trying to get the audience to hang on for, the better it is to try and almost formulaically put some plot points in place so they have some familiar things to kind of grab onto. And by God, how many times have we seen the preparation of the vehicle scene?
Mm-hmm.
But damn it, you know, here it is, and it works just fine.
Apparently that last end tag of the scene where the spleen just, like, farts by accident and it flares up behind him, that was an accident, apparently. Like, a crew member had thrown a lighter in there, and it went boom while they were shooting him, and, like, his reaction, like, whoa, was real. And they were like, that's fucking funny. So we're going to have you say, excuse me, and we're going to get the other characters' reactions now, because that's awesome.
In my HO, the best building of the vehicle scene is in Explorers.
Yeah, very good one.
Beautiful score. Fucking sentimental ship building thing with kids, and it just totally works. I prefer that to
who's got the Chevy logo as part of their outfit?
I don't know. I think it's the Sphinx.
Yeah. So here you go.
That sucks. When Captain Amazing has all these amazing sponsorships, and one guy just has Chevrolet,
and not even probably a license.
Fate worse than death. Yeah, he's not even licensed by them. He's just pimping them because he likes Chevys.
No, the Chevy logo is on Mr. Furious's.
Yeah,
belt.
Mr. Furious, because all of his stuff is built to junkyard stuff. Yeah. That's where he gets his outfit.
In that case, that's clever. Fuck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ah, goddamn you, movie.
Production design?
talk me out of it.
Tries to run. No.
I hope that next year, Ryan, as in Weber, as in, hi, Ryan, I can hear you through your speakers, does for his
I'm watching you.
He just takes every time that you've used the delivery device of fist in the air, what the hell, and just puts every one you've ever done, because it's like screenwriting, Shyamalan, production design. Just puts them all in a thing.
Just go for an hour. Yeah.
And you will ultimately sound like a dolphin trainer, because every line they say ends like this.
That actually would be a great montage. I like that.
Dork man.
Montage.
There's a fantastic what is it called? There's a sketch company, and they have a sketch called Montage, and it's literally this guy meets this girl and then goes through all three of the montages you ever see when a guy meets a girl, like where he's getting fit, and another one where he's learning to date, and then another one where he's like learning a skill, and then the montage of dating her and then it doesn't work, and then the breakup montage, and then like the later like losing his friends montage. It's like all these montages just hammered together, and it is actually really brilliant.
On the subject of why are we getting so far fucking off the topic of the movie? On the subject of those
movie
things,
the movie hasn't quite gotten there yet. I mean, it's entertaining. If we had the dialogue, we'd probably be able to comment more.
There's one of my another scene that I liked here again, because I like whenever Jeanine Garofalo just gets to riff like she does at the end with the speech about supporting independent film, which kills me. But the whole thing about how he's going along, but he's not even furious anymore. He's all wimped out, and they're trying to make him mad and can't get him to be mad.
Nobody likes you.
Yeah, and you're you say these things that are supposed to be profound, and they actually are meaningless. No, nothing? Okay, God damn it. Can't make him mad.
I was going to bring
up... I so want a Herkimer Battle Jitney. Look at that thing. Mm. That's the coolest thing ever.
Do you think it was full-sized?
Oh, yeah, it totally exists. I mean, it's like whatever it's made of, really. It's like it looks like a fire truck, sort of. It looks like it's a converted fire truck or who knows what.
I think it's the leftovers from when Kirstie Alley molted.
See, there it was.
There's a stretch.
Take a drink.
I think, though, that we're getting off topic because this movie basically takes care of itself. Like, there's just some great scenes.
The movie's fine without us.
Good.
Yeah, I mean, they're funny to they're funny if you're watching them, and all we could really say is, that's damn funny.
It's actually good because at least this cuts down on the, that's a good line there. We can only do it from
so
memory.
Say what you were going to say.
I was going to bring up, we were talking about internet memes and the video series that Sax was talking about. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Epic Mealtime, but best thing ever. It is this, first of all, you have to understand, and I can't convey it, the character of the guy that's presenting Epic Mealtime to you, but he's this fictional guy who is really fucking awesome. How many of this did you use, huh? Like, just it's really, he's so defiantly awesome in sort of like a wigger kind of way. And what they're doing is every week they make a different meal as epic as possible. And it's basically a cooking show as if it was directed by Michael Bay. So they're making a burrito made out of turkeys, goats, salami, and bacon that's deep fried and covered in whipped cream, served with chocolate sauce, and fed to hot chicks every week. And it's awesome. It's funny, and it's funny again, and it's clever on top of that. And it's disgusting because they really make this food, and they really always eat all of it. And it's
There's another one.
It like plays out as a montage, and it's awesome.
There's
it's
another one
idea.
I just found out about.
Epic Mealtime is what I'm talking about.
Here's a little factor for you. Gold is not ferromagnetic.
Yeah, no, it's that's a problem, which I guess means that those guys get totally cheated because they can't. Obviously, it's not real gold.
Yeah.
You can tell by the cross section.
I was going to say there's another video. I haven't even watched it, but I just love the premise. It's called something like I Can't Believe That Fucking Worked, and it's like a cooking show, but it's like a college, dorm room cooking show where they're just like, we got three ingredients. Let's try and figure out a way to make it work.
We've got rum, macaroni, and bread.
Yeah, and we'll figure out a way to do that. We'll throw it in the microwave, and then most of the time, apparently, the thing is that they eat it and it actually tastes pretty good, and that's, I can't believe that fucking worked.
In the chat room, they're making a good point on a critical level, which is, this is a fun movie. I like it. I can tell you guys like it, but it could be 100 minutes long, not 2 hours.
It could probably be shorter.
Yeah, it's
I mean, we've gotten off.
I think it's 201.
We've gone off on a couple of tangents here and there. I mean, this is a movie that you can sit down and watch definitely and appreciate.
You appreciate it when you're watching it,
but it's another one almost like Zombieland where you're like, this is a movie I put on in the background at parties, and you can stop and look at it at any moment and be like, this is a funny moment. And then you can go back to the party. You know, it's one of those kinds of movies. It's not terrible by any stretch. I really love this movie, but it is a bit long. It's hard to kind of sit down and watch the whole thing.
It is. I'm surprised that it's 2 hours long, but that it could certainly have stood to be a little tighter that way.
But most of the time is spent that we could have cut would have been character stuff, which I'm
That's
okay
true.
With.
It's always
That's
tough.
True.
I like
it's
these
always
characters.
Tough to choose. If you didn't like these characters, this movie wouldn't work at all.
Yeah.
Now here's my problem with that. Okay, wait. Hold on.
We're looking at him.
Yeah. Oh. Oh, well, not that.
We but, the camera okay. people. Anyway.
Fucking two magic beans. Yeah. Two magic beans?
What?
No. I saw his magic beans.
He's got two magic beans.
He went invisible. He didn't cease to exist. So he would not have walked out of his clothing.
Yeah, his clothing wouldn't have fallen off. That's true.
Well, it depends on the definition of invisible. He could be phasing right out of our universe is what he's actually doing.
But then how does he articulate himself to turn off the device?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because in the third episode of the second season of the original series,
logic
they
clearly states.
Oh, now he gets one too on the montage.
But online blueprints clearly indicate that the quantum flux is independent of the guidance matrix.
So I sure hope someone lost their job over that one.
Like he puts all those complicated clothes on in seconds.
I like how. What did they say to Janine Garofalo? Her performance is yes, and she's kind of smiling because she's looking at his giant black cock. That's what's happening in that scene. How did they direct her on that? Did they say, all right, now Janine, did they say he has a giant dick? Or did they say, you like what you see? Or how did they do that? Because Janine Garofalo is such the very definition of a total feminist.
Well, she's also the one that you could talk to directly. She'd be the one like, yeah. It's a dick and it's you like it.
I think she's
like,
all right.
It's a dick and it has
a
knuckle.
I thought she was being impressed by his dick. It's more like sort of amused like that he was naked. And just, you know, because she has the great lines. Like, maybe you should put some shorts on if you're going to fight evil
after
today.
That, yeah. Maybe you should put some shorts on or something if you want to keep fighting evil
this
today.
This is another scene that could have gone further. The whole like, they
yes.
Their clothes are shrinking, but we're not really seeing it. And it's just like, well, if you're going to bother to do the joke, then
yeah, let's go. Yeah. Uh-huh.
I'm not saying that it has to be naked, but at least
how
it could
hard
have,
R
like,
do we want to go with this?
It could have been implied nudity as opposed to they just go from skirts to mini skirts.
Is this an R?
I doubt it.
This seems PG-13
to
me.
PG-13.
Boy, if this was an R, that would have been. What
yeah,
we're
then
talking.
We would have been talking about some good stuff. But
they should have done a joke where they did the clothes shrinking rays on those guys, but then they just fit really well.
If they're rappers, yeah, then their pants would just pull up themselves. Yeah. Oh, that's much better.
And the wheels on their cars would stop spinning at strop lights.
They're spinning.
I don't know what the hell, because I've lived in...
and I've given up hope, so there you go.
I've lived in L.A. for 3 years. In the last week, I had never seen spinners on cars. I thought we'd gotten over that. In the last week, I've seen spinners on like 4 or 5 different cars. I don't know if I just started noticing it again. Bader Meinhof style or something else, but whatever.
I don't know what the hell.
I don't know what the hell.
I don't know what the hell.
Period. Declarative.
What is this? I don't even.
Yeah, PG-13.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, do you guys know what film was the first to come out as a PG-13?
Yes.
Temple of Doom, right?
Yeah. Spielberg!
Yeah. Spielberg! Molaram, Sularam!
Con! Spock! Con and Spock! Oh, the little shovel. That was a big reveal at the time.
He's got a trowel. Yeah. He branched out. He's got a trowel.
So, Dorkman, how is William H. Macy at spinning a shovel around in an attractive way?
How would you rate his form?
Yeah. Well, that's a bit hard. He's really just spinning and chopping. That's what he's doing right there. But
wow, the internet's Dorkman Scott approves of Bill Macy's spinning technique.
He shovels well.
He's actually doing it. He's not spinning from the wrist. He's like flipping it around.
He's actually
hand.
He'll so. Also he's doing that, which is more of a color guard move.
Yeah,
I was going to say a Scotch guard move. He's also doing the thing where he flicks it like a tennis racket and it spins in his palm.
Right.
Another good move. Useless with a lightsaber because it's. Symmetrical.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not super hard stuff to do, but, you know, the point is that it's silly and not particularly athletic.
The one that always impressed me, oddly, is in the background of the first Pirates movie. I don't think we even called it out. When Norrington is awarded his sword at that ceremony, he does this really cool little...
Yeah, we were talking about other stuff at the time, but I wanted to call out that he's like, he's doing a bunch of little twirly things to test the balance and stuff.
And we also didn't call this out. Orlando Bloom, in that scene where he's presenting Fozzie Bear with the sword, does his flippy thing, and apparently Orlando Bloom really sucks at that. Uh-huh. So every single take, it fell, and the guy was fucking terrified.
Eddie Izzard's moment of fame in this movie.
Eddie Izzard and Janine Garofalo. This is like my favorite showdown of alternative comedians.
It's like Twitter is fighting right in front of me.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Stop. Don't fight. Just talk.
Yeah.
Talk at each other. Yeah. Disagree over
this
something.
This scene can go on for 5 minutes. This is okay with me. Alternative comedians showing down. I love it.
Dan Cook, stay at home.
Yeah, that's right. Well, he could have been in a part of it. And Dana Gould, for that matter. Dana Gould is great. Bring him in.
Wasn't Dan Cook's character called the Waffler?
Yes, he's the Waffler.
How do they not make a political joke out of that?
Maybe it was.
Why wasn't it played by John Kerry? LOL.
Because it was 1999.
Why wasn't it played by Ross Perot?
I don't think he waffled. I think he was just insane.
All right.
But consistent, at least.
Yeah, consistently insane. You can really get it. It's like a Wonderland personality.
Yeah, exactly.
You can get away with anything, man.
He's got one thing.
Like, you don't know what Ann Coulter thinks because she's just going to make it up that day.
Yeah.
And Coulter is pretty.
I love how he's like holding her.
She's a good person at heart.
Her at fingernail point.
Right, and you just buy that it's got
to
be lethal.
I see what we're doing. We're trying not to be sued by Ann Coulter. Fuck her. Anyway.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, no.
Bring
it,
you whore.
The opinions of Michael Scott did not necessarily represent. All right.
Put him down in front. He's going to add that to our outro.
Get out of there, horse. You are not a political pundit. You are a horse. Anyway. Did you ever see that meme that's just like a picture of a horse in like some place it doesn't belong, and it's like, get out of there, horse.
A horse walks, a horse walks into a bar.
That's one of my favorite ones because it's just so straightforward. It's like, get out of there, horse. You are not a jet pilot. You are a horse.
A horse walks into a bar, and three people leave because they understand the danger of the situation.
Yay.
I love those anti-jokes. Three guys walk into a bar. The fourth guy ducks. How many mosquitoes does it take to screw in a light bulb? Two, but I don't know how they got in there.
Here we go. And now there's actually like, oh, he's now he's going to be pissed.
That's right. He actually is angry.
Yeah.
I would have liked a insert at some point in the sequence of Hank Azaria walking up to the wall and pulling his forks back out.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's mom's flatware, too.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. He needs to get him back.
And I do love that little touch at the end. He's like, I'm out. Yeah. I'm tapped. Like, yep. He puts up his hands.
I
like,
hope he can make it from there.
That's all I got.
I hope he can make it. I just hope he can make it from there.
Oh, man. I think it would be amazing to be acting in a scene with Jeffrey Rush just totally chewing the scenery. Like I'd almost be scared. I'd almost be like, oh man, he could turn that on me at any second.
Well, the fact Aztec that he, gold. Yeah.
The fact that
Cortez himself.
Yeah.
The fact that he's hissing.
Yeah. He's doing this weird shit with his fingers.
And I enjoy that they have weird fingernail cam. They must have had to build.
Yeah, they built an actual fake finger.
Which I'm
there.
I'm sure it's not a special feature where it attacks everybody.
Yeah, I was running from the finger cam,
like in Jackass.
That actually would have been
great. Like coming up behind people and.
What the hell is going on? So I don't even know. We don't have the subtitles, so I forget. The what does the evil machine do?
It's the psychofraculator. It makes your every hallucination a reality.
Oh, yes.
And he's going to unleash that on the city, which he seems to indicate will destroy the city.
This is drive the city insane.
Look,
he's basically Sandman?
Scarecrow.
Yeah. It started with an S.
Yeah.
Casanova, Scarecrow, Stein.
Is Sandman, Neil Gaiman, Spider-Man 3, or both? Neil Gaiman? But wasn't Thomas Hayden Church Sandman?
Yes.
Well, then what the fuck, comics?
I don't understand.
I'm totally lost. I don't get it.
I don't get it. No stars.
Get off that podcast, horse. You're not a...
Get off that podcast, horse. Get out of there, horse.
I like that you screwed it up. Get off that podcast, horse. You don't have...
opinions.
Yes. A face. You don't have a pod to cast in.
I'm sure people listening to this as their first down in front experience are like, those guys are having a lot of fun, but they're not talking about Mystery Man at all.
Why does anyone listen to that?
Again, this movie
we do say friends in your head. At the end of the day, that's all we're trying for.
We're just douchebags. We're the frat boys, basically.
Yeah. Have you ever noticed?
And then he actually gets to be a hero at the end.
Yeah.
Is this the second time? Yeah, it's the second time I've made a gay comment today. Have you ever noticed?
Yeah, so it's a light day for you.
I know, right? Yeah. Good joke. That Ben Stiller is pretty.
Oh yeah.
He's
a good-looking comedian.
Which is weird because you wouldn't see that coming from his parents.
And in some of
dude. And in now, some I of, love Jerry Stiller, but he looks like the guy in he looks like who's on Ponda Baba's guy in the Star Wars cantina. He looks like Evazan, Dr. Evazan.
I don't like you either.
I wanted for death in 12 systems. That's Jerry Stiller.
Yeah.
he's a little better looking than that.
Yeah, Ben Stiller and stuff, like especially Tropic Thunder and stuff like that. He's like, in really good shape too. It's like fucking A. Yeah.
And it was funny. There was a he did Tom Cruise a lot.
I wouldn't say pretty. He's
I'm
got
sure
the rugged look,
but he's got But there was an he did a bunch of Tom Cruise impressions. He even did one for like the MTV Movie Awards when Mission Impossible 2 came out.
He used to do him on his show
and Ben Stiller's show. And then at one point I saw an interview where I don't remember the context of the interview, and that would be important for conveying all of the funniness, but it was basically where they sat Ben Stiller dressed as Tom Cruise next to Tom Cruise, and then Tom Cruise would answer a question, and then Ben Stiller would answer the same question the same way at like 10% more, and it became hysterical in about three questions.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine.
I'm a very physical,
physical
actor.
Actor.
Yeah. Whoa, okay.
Your Tom Cruise will get better?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So then she has to have a heart-to-heart talk with her dad's skull.
Yeah.
And go, look, you're a skull, and, you know, we had to say goodbye at some point, so this might be the time.
Yeah. But, you know...
Same effect there as the tornado in a can for a hot
True minute. Enough. You would think that maybe they would throw the tornado in the can into the air and...
Frank in the chat room points out that Ben Stiller married Christine Taylor. I will point out that Christine Taylor is one of the women that Neil Patrick Harris slept with prior to going straight dude.
No,
she blew it, really.
Basically, she had her chance, and she ruined it for all the girls.
Yeah.
Let's not blame Christine Taylor.
No.
The cock knows what it wants.
The cock wants what the cock wants.
Even if it is itself.
Barney Stinson.
And, you know, one of the great things
and
about
this is the great part of this movie, though, is there's still 12 minutes left.
Right.
Which seems impossible because there's only this little, it must be some really
lengthy
credits.
Yeah, I think it's just the credits. But as we kind of glossed over a little bit, everyone, as you said, everyone got to have the opportunity where their one useless power was actually useful.
Right.
And it's like, of all the things that you could have the ability to do right now, it's great that you had that one. Thank God we had someone yes. who had that one.
Who had a flying bowling ball, who had was able to gas people. And
that's also the key to a good Dungeons & Dragons experience, by the way. Every player
no
needs
kidding.
To have their little moment where okay. whatever abilities they have are essentially
I
necessary.
See. The shoveler makes his saving throw, and
by the way,
I would always try to do that, but then I'd completely fuck up. Somehow.
This exact moment happened in Armageddon, where the blonde guy he gives like the kid a shuttle and all that stuff, and then it's that's my daddy. Like that moment happened in Armageddon, but the only difference was lighting and a dolly.
Yeah, dolly shot.
Because it's sliding across the room as he says, that's my daddy. And I'm like, Michael Bay.
The exact moment just happened in Unstoppable. I just watched Unstoppable the other day, which is a great movie. But by God, it's got that same, you know, I'm going through a terrible breakup with my wife. But then she sees me save the world on TV and realizes I'm an okay guy and comes running to fall into my arms. You know, it's like, it's a trope. It's a total trope.
I totally figured this out, by the way. If you want to make a montage, an epic montage, still a montage, but an epic one like Michael Bay, the only thing you do is put the camera on a dolly, slide it sideways during the take.
That's how you shoot a Michael Bay film.
That's it.
The Michael Bay style. You just dolly. You
just slide
it
back and forth. And by the way, if you
never
can't
ever
spin the camera,
the camera,
just get to the end of the dolly and go back.
Yep.
No,
back the other way.
It's Ken Burns-ing real life. Like
yeah.
You pan the camera over the document of life.
Yeah. That's deep, man. This should be the name of your fucking Judy Blume novel.
I think that's a t-shirt right there.
Pan the camera over the document of life. Or it could be an Indiana Jones movie. I can't tell.
Yeah.
Indiana Jones and the document of life. Where's the birth certificate?
Oh. The super squad.
I like how she keeps it. She's like, well, I guess.
Yeah,
trying to get
rid of him, but he didn't get destroyed.
Can't throw it away. Mm-hmm. You know, that'd be rude. I'd love for them to pull one of that. I mean, they're never going to because it was a bomb. But I'd love for them to pull like a 10 years later sequel. You know, where are they now?
That is Watchmen.
Yeah,
I guess so.
They got mad.
Yeah, they got mad and sex got awkward.
9 minutes
Kinky
of
Usher.
Credits.
Wow.
This is why Kinky Usher can't get work anymore. He has a 9 minute credit sequence.
Yeah, I'm sure that's the problem.
Mystery Men is a fun movie. I enjoy the characters. I enjoy the story. Like I said before, this movie would be a good double feature with Galaxy Quest for me, in my estimation.
Yeah,
I would
go.
Watch these two together because they're both character-driven, genre send-ups, if not lampoons or satires, that tell a story that could have been an actual superhero story, but they just happen to not be that. And Galaxy Quest, it could have been a Star Trek movie. It's just a fun damn movie. It's not perfect, but every character is destroying. They're like chewing up the scene, spitting it out, chewing it up again, doing like a spider thing with it. It's a fun movie, man, and that's all I got to say about it. Sax, how are you on Mystery Men at this point? You weren't big on it at the beginning of the episode. Are you warming up or
no? I mean, it's the same. It's the same sort of like it's you know good to play in the background while you're having a conversation with a friend and stopping to see those moments you like, as we've repeated so many times. It's like a window dressing movie, and that's good for it. And I love anything that deals with the superhero genre but isn't over the top, isn't like so capey that it gets
Daredevil.
Sad. Yeah.
Capey, that's a good word.
I actually would have enjoyed this movie as not a comedy. Like I would have loved to see the same plot about low rent superheroes and not felt it necessary to like install a comedy, but I'm glad they did. I'm certainly even Ben Stiller, who I still think should eat poison, is definitely very good in this film.
Poisoned?
He should eat poisoned.
Oh, okay.
That's our no, he should eat poison. Or you know,
or be poisoned. I thought you said
one of the two.
Okay.
I thought
you said
fuck him.
I just want to make sure that
yeah.
I thought you would may say hey. he's poison, but you know you're actually advocating the poisoning of Ben Stiller.
No, that's the thing. That's why I said he has to eat poison. I'm
okay.
Not suggesting anyone should poison him deliberately.
Yeah,
I think Robert De Niro gave him an antidote or something.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough.
We're just saying, Ben, if you're listening, you know.
Kill yourself.
That was by poison. That was
now it's Ann Coulter and Ben Stiller on our ass.
Apparently I honestly think this movie could have been Ricky Jay and Eddie Izzard standing in a room discussing the movie. And
I would pay
just
to see that. I would totally pay to see that.
Dude, I want
to
see a table talk with fucking Ricky Jay, Eddie Izzard, and Janine Garofalo.
Yeah.
Right
nice.
Right now.
No, not right now.
What's your
ten
Twitter fantasy?
That, yeah. 10 years ago. 10 years ago, Janine Garofalo. Not current now. Janine Garofalo.
That would be the ultimate episode of Real Time with Bill Maher. I think that's the panel of the gods.
Michael Dorkman Scott, Mystery Man?
Yeah. I feel about the same way now.
Does this movie
that
warm your
beginning?
Heart and make you want to hug things?
Yeah. It really is, I think. It was one of those ahead-of-its-time movies that kind of people were like, what the fuck is that? That doesn't fit in my box. And, so just
the joke we're passing
this
up.
And there's the credits say superheroes, bad guys, citizens, and later in the credits Frank points out it says Dockers is the official khaki of Champion City.
Yes.
But this is a very strange movie and it's kind of blends genres and stuff like that, and I think people just kind of weren't into that kind of movie at the
Thomas
time.
Thomas Burton,
AKA
CeeLo.
That's
yep,
right.
Frat Boys, Michael Bay.
Michael Bay. And Ricky Rackman is also,
where's
I believe,
Timo
a director.
Now?
A director.
If CeeLo did so well for himself.
But
you know what I want to know?
Mark,
where the fuck
Mark
is
Mudders, Mark Mothersbaugh from? It's like,
was he in this?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Is he in this? Where the fuck?
You fucking kidding me?
I just want to know where DJ Jazzy Jeff is. That's all.
Dane Cook, Doug Jones.
What did Will Smith do to DJ Jazzy Jeff? Where's the body, man?
I want more of Reverse Psychologist.
Anyway, Trey?
We're on me already. Did Dorkman ever finish?
I kind of just trailed off.
He
there.
Just
kind of
interrupted eight times and lost the plot.
You and this movie have a lot in common.
Yeah. I agree with Sax. I'm like, it's good. I love the movie, but it's certainly one that I watch like with friends casually. It's not one that I sit down and I'm like, oh, I'm gonna watch Mystery Men right now. You know.
Yeah, it's not exactly Unforgiven. But,
yeah.
But yeah, it's. Are you done? I don't want to interrupt you again.
Yes.
Okay, fair enough.
Full stop.
Yeah, full stop. The end. Pass. Pass the conch. It's some parts of it just don't quite make it. And yeah, it's amazing that it is from 1999. That's kind of hard to figure that it was that long ago that this movie came out, because it feels like something they would make now, which is probably, as you were saying, that's probably the problem.
Yeah.
Is if they made it now, people are going to go, oh, yeah, I totally get it. Yeah,
I'm waiting for a distributor to do that, by the way. We're just so, to say. Coming this summer, Mystery Men.
Mystery Men.
Talk about a reboot. Oh, nice.
Talk about a reboot. You know, it's like it's due to reboot Mystery Men. Why not?
You know, they could actually say they're going to reboot it, and all the old cast could say they're going to be in it, then
release this movie again.
And everyone in America would buy it.
Look at the cast in this thing. My God. So, yeah, it's a
they
movie that.
They got Dane Cook.
He's totally big now. It's a movie that got that reputation. One of those weird movies that gets that weird. Before anyone saw it, oh, that's not a good movie. It's not good. I heard it wasn't good. I don't know what that is. And it was kind of it went over budget for whatever reason. I hope that wasn't the budget they planned to spend on it, because that was a bit crazy. And it just, you know, something about it had that taint of being
this
troubled.
This movie cost, what, $68
million? $68 million in 1999.
Sucker Punch this year cost $80.
Cost $80. Yeah.
This cost $70 12 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, because of
this cost $10 million less than Sucker Punch did last year.
Yeah,
they had to go and build all that shit. And yeah, you mentioned the IMDb thing, and I went and browsed the message boards really quickly, and it's totally like you see ones that are like, this is the worst movie ever, and then I read it, and it's like, this movie is dumb and not funny and sucks, and who are these people and blah blah blah. I'm like, this is written by someone who didn't have to see the movie to write this, and I bet he didn't.
Yeah,
you know,
he did. You don't have to write.
Who are these people? What under a rock person?
Yeah.
Like Janine Garofalo, please.
Yeah. Who is that? Well, you know, as we learned.
Although apparently Ben Stiller went on the Howard Stern show and
just
said,
recently
yeah,
said, yeah,
so.
I kind of dissed the movie. Yeah. So that's why it's gotten a lot of attention. Suddenly it's having a little spurt of attention.
Sign of a true Catholic.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he's both, of course, but he's.
You'll notice, by the way, that Hank Azaranza still has to be titled as himself, open parentheses, Homer Simpson, close parentheses, to get people to care.
He's not Homer Simpson. That's Dan Castellaneta. Yeah. He's everybody else. He's Mo. Basically. He's Mo and all those characters. He's Mo, especially.
Lately.
That's
been Mo-centric for two seasons.
What a leap beat to drink.
There's nobody by that name here. Alex Funky. Woo! Work with Alex on The Abyss and on The Blob. So, yeah, this is all top-notch, you know, and look how long the effects credits have been going on. All this conversation we've been having.
They all got in there.
Everybody's in it.
CJ Matt, painting producer, Trey Stokes.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. I did
you
work on
this movie. You
buried
the lead.
I worked on this movie. That's right. I forgot that I worked on this movie.
Everyone did, apparently.
I never did actually work on this movie. It's a shame. I would have. But 99, I would have been on...
Polar Express?
Yellow Submarine at that point.
Oh. Well... You and everyone else lived on that hit, so that's fine.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a movie that, yeah, I think we've probably would have been interesting to see if this movie had been released, like, now, you know, and maybe a couple of trims to that opening party scene with the old people and a few other things, and probably change that song. People are like, why does it have that old
hey,
song?
Hey, now. Now it's we all, didn't even mention that.
All retro with the rock stars.
They were, like, booking
we're
it.
Better than that.
They were, okay.
We're above it.
No, I want to say it. They were booking on the fucking All-Star song by Smash Mouth. And then when it shows up in the movie, aside from the credits, it's in the montage. And you're like, all right, cool. And it literally shows up long enough for it to go, hey, now you're an All-Star. And then the fucking montage is over. It's about 10 seconds long.
Yeah.
It's adorable.
But it is in the credits.
What were the other two movies that came out like the same year that also had this
Shrek.
Damn song? There was Shrek.
Shrek had All-Star and also a Gap commercial.
There was a gap. There was one more movie though that was more obscure.
Blade Runner,
probably someone in the
yes,
someone
very
in the chat
faint,
room,
but it's in there.
Probably, oh, Rat Race. I'm pretty sure was the
yeah,
one.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Oh my god.
So, yeah,
starring Rowan Atkinson as someone else, and fuck that.
And yeah, as somebody we don't want to see him play. And
I
John
think
Lovitz.
It was that, yeah.
Everything about this movie could have been done cheaper. Look at all the '70s music they got really cheap.
Yeah,
and then they probably spent another
Fifth
million
of Beethoven,
on Smash Mouth.
Planet Claire. Fifth of Beethoven.
Anyway.
Dockers are the official khakis of Champion City.
In loving memory of Mart Wheeler.
And on that note, this has been Down in Front, and you can always find more episodes at downinfront.net. Subscribe to us on iTunes, get a brand new episode every single week. Twitter.com/downinfront, Facebook Down in Front Show, email us at downinfrontshow@gmail.com. Go to the forum, involve yourself in the conversation, a wonderful community of people there that are not trolls. At the forum, we announce weekly when and what the live shows will be. If you want to involve yourself in the conversation, literally in the chat room, those all happen at downinfront.net/live, but they're announced at the forum. You'll have to go there to find out. You can buy this movie from us at the store and we get a buck. You can buy one of our t-shirts, we get $100, or you can donate money to us because you're just such a great person. With the shiny PayPal button, we're not asking, we're just saying. If you don't want to do any of those things, please rate or review us on iTunes. Matt made a video of the show notes and chapter breaks in iTunes. iTunes paid for this.
Product placement.
Holden Hill designed and maintains the website and also does the Android app, which is available now in the marketplace. The iPhone app is coming soon. And until next week, my name is Steve Christie.
And the Blue Raja.
This has been Down in Front. Thank you very much for listening. Good night. Good night. Hey, can we bring our brewskis?
Yes, you may definitely bring the brewskis.
Pull my finger.